is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Poy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. Welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on this Monday, the day after the Bills season comes to an end. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and our One Buffalo studio here for the next 3 hours to talk about this Bills team and this game yesterday, the AFC wildcard playoff game. Donald, for my money, locker cleanout day is the worst day in the pro football year. I hate this day, whenever it comes, whether it's December or January as it is here, you know, 8-10 days into January, even later. It's always, to me, the saddest day in the football calendar.
I think it is because, you know, and speaking from a player's perspective, in the locker room, when you're cleaning out your locker and you're saying you go to your boys that are next to you, the guys that you've been working with, the guys that you've been seeing every day since August, since July, and now it's like, some of you guys, I don't even know if I'm going to see you again next year unless we're playing against you because you're going to have free agents that won't be back on this team. Some guys might not even play football anymore, you know? So it's a tough day when the season is over. Obviously, this team, they had a good season. They had a good run. They made it into the playoffs, but it ends short. You never want your season to end short with other teams still playing the next week. That's never a good thing. And so, yeah, it's a tough day all around.
Let me ask you this from a player's perspective. It's you're saying goodbye to people in the locker room. You're moving on, as you said, the uncertainty about next year. But I also wonder, with the wear and tear of the NFL season, when the season finally ends, at some level, does a player say, whew, I need some downtime here. I need to chill a little bit, right? It has to be.
Yeah, I remember talking to a couple of guys that I knew who had played in Super Bowls, one being Victor Cruz. And I remember talking to him the year that he played in the game, and he talked about the practice week. And he was like, man, I'm so happy we're here in the Super Bowl, but I can't wait until this thing is over because my body is done. It's right? Such a long season. I can't wait to just be able to rest and kind of get away from football. When football season is over, you don't want to see a football. You don't want to smell a locker room. You don't want to see a coach. I mean, you don't even want to see the guys on your team for a good amount of time. I just want to go be with my family, go on vacation. I need some time away. My body is sore. Guys who have injuries, and this is always the tough thing, guys who have injuries sometimes can't go home yet because they will make them stay here for rehab and for treatment and things like that before they allow them to go home. But when football season comes to an end, you're wiped out. And it's time to rest for a little bit before I have to get back to work.
And yet, as long as it's viable and as long as the playoff run lasts, people are just – you just what work on adrenaline, right? You just suck it up and go as long as you can, right? You don't even think about it.
That's exactly what you have to do. You have to – and that's why you work out in the off season. That's why you continue to work out. Guys have to still get their two workouts throughout the course of the season because you have to. And then guys get the massages. They get the chiropractors. They get the all types of different treatments and things that they're doing now, yoga and Zumba. I mean, guys do a lot of different things to be able to keep their bodies in shape enough to be able to last through a season. That's why they do that, because it's a long season. But by the time you get to today, it's time to go.
Yeah, time to go, sadly. And it is sad to see the lockers being cleaned out and the players saying goodbye and sort of exit interviews for players with the coaching staff.
That was the next thing I was going to get.
Yeah,
that's a big thing. You have all your exit interviews. And so the biggest thing is, and you'll see a lot of guys, and it's hard for this team, I'm sure none of these guys have flights. When you're out of this thing, when you have 5 games to go and you know you're not in the playoffs, your flight is already booked.
Yeah.
These guys don't have their flights or anything booked yet. They probably hadn't even started to pack their homes up yet. But when I was playing here, we knew we weren't in the playoffs. And so it was like you were racing upstairs to get your name on the board, to get an appointment to see the coach, to see the GM so that you can get up.
When did you book your flights, like September or so?
No, not September. You get around December, though. You're like, all right, we're out of this thing.
Yeah. Man, it's a sad day. There's a lot to talk about yesterday's game. And, of course, we've got an entire offseason to kind of figure out what the Bills are up to. But going on here today, locker clean-out day, we're going to hear from some of the players in the locker room. We also want to keep the focus kind of on yesterday's game. Look, there's plenty of time to talk about the offseason, and we will right here, 3 hours a day from now until the Bills head back to training camp. But yesterday's game was momentous, right? First playoff game after a 17-season drought. A wild card playoff game where things did not go well for the Bills and plenty to break down. We're going to try to keep the focus on that with you today. Try to keep the focus on yesterday's game, the 10-3 loss to the Jaguars, what went wrong, what could have gone right. And what makes it, Donald, to my mind, especially disheartening yesterday's loss is the fact that it was so winnable. It would not have taken much to win that game. A play here, a play there, down at the goal line. You don't punch it into the end zone. Bortles, a couple of runs, you know. Maybe they could pitch a shutout and keep them out of the end zone. Turns out they could not. Bills only gave up 10 points, however. You just need a little bit of – just a little offense to win that game. You're not going to win anything with 3 points. But it was so winnable, Donald. It didn't have to be this way. And that's what makes it, I think, especially discouraging after all the good things that have happened to the Bills and by the Bills this year, after re-engaging the fan base, really electrifying the fan base with the way they clinched their playoff spot a week ago. It's really tough today because that game was just lying there waiting to be won.
You know what's crazy is coming into the season, we kept saying, if you can just get your defense back. Your offense last year was top 10 scoring offense. If you can just get your defense back, you'll have a team that can get into the playoffs. And you think about it, they still got into the playoffs, but there were a few games this year where you lost 10-3 or some really low-scoring game. And it's like, man, you couldn't score one touchdown. You couldn't score two touchdowns just to pull out a win. You know, it's like they can't pull everything together on this team. 1 year, one thing is good. The next year, another thing is good. Hopefully, things are moving up and you can get both sides of the ball now playing consistently well, where you can lean on each other and you don't always have to say, well, we know you're going to have a defensive performance that's going to keep you in this thing. But, yeah, yesterday's game was definitely winnable. If you lose the game 10-3, I mean, you have to think that your offense can score one touchdown. You have to think that even your defense might get a takeaway. Those are things that they weren't able to do yesterday, and that's why they didn't win the game.
3 points in the loss at Carolina back in week two. 10 points in the horrible 47-10 loss against New Orleans back in mid-November. 3 points in the home loss December 3rd against New England. One touchdown in the overtime win against Indianapolis. One touchdown in the loss at New England. It's hard to win that way. And, of course, 3 points yesterday. Very hard to win that way. So that's where we'll start talking about yesterday's game. You are welcome to join us. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Look back at yesterday's wildcard playoff loss in Jacksonville. Also on the show today, coming up at the bottom of the hour, about 22 minutes away, Preston Brown, Bills veteran linebacker who finishes up the season and heads into free agency. For him, we'll talk with Preston Brown, the NFL's leading tackler. He'll be live in studio with us today at 12:30. Bills insider Chris Brown joins us live in studio at 1 o'clock to break down yesterday's game, take a peek at the future. 2 o'clock, we'll have Jay Feely, the former NFL kicker, part of the broadcast team on yesterday's CBS broadcast, the NFL on CBS. He was there on the sidelines for the Bills and the Jacksonville Jaguars. He'll be joining us at 2. And all day long, we'll hear from the Buffalo Bills locker room. Today, we'll also get some sound in from yesterday's losing locker room. But today, on Locker Cleanout Day, we'll hear from several Bills players and their thoughts going into this offseason. All of that coming up in the next 3 hours. And, of course, you're welcome to join us, 803-0550. And toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy and Donald Jones here until 3 o'clock today. You may want to weigh in on our Twitter poll as we maintain the focus on what went down there yesterday. What was your biggest takeaway from Sunday's loss in Jacksonville? That's what we're talking about on Twitter today, and the early results are in after about 30 minutes or so. What was your biggest takeaway from yesterday's loss in Jacksonville? Pretty overwhelmingly, most people cite the struggles of the pass game. They were paramount yesterday, no question about that. 133 yards through the air, not going to get it done. 14% say the problems the Bills had in the red zone, that now infamous series late second quarter when they had first and goal, 1.5 yards out, and had to settle for a field goal, all of the problems associated with that possession. 1% say the lack of defensive takeaways. It was interesting in the locker room yesterday when I talked to Bills players on defense and said, you know, hey, what a great effort. You know, what you had limited them to one touchdown, 10 points. All of them, Poyer, Lorenzo, all of them said, yeah, but we didn't take the ball away. They knew they knew that that was their mission this week and every week, really. They knew that their offense needed that help, takeaways. And they actually had their hands on a couple of balls yesterday. They could have got some interceptions, failed to do so. But it's just interesting to me that on the part of the defenders, Donald, they never got to the point where they felt sorry for themselves and never looked at the offense and said, what's going on over there? Whenever there was a tough loss, it was like, oh, we should have got more takeaways. And I think that's pretty admirable on their part.
They know that's what they've done well all year. And they also know that the team has lost games when they weren't able to create those turnovers. So going into the game, you know we might have to get some turnovers. You know, as a defense, you know the defense on the other side of the ball is a very good defense, and your offense might not put up that many points. So we need to continue to get the ball back for our offense. And for the most part, obviously, the Jaguars' offense wasn't able to move the ball, but sometimes you need that big play to spark something. That big play can be an interception. That big play can be a fumble return. Maybe even score on defense, a pick six or something like that, fumble return for a touchdown. They know that's what they've been able to do all year. And when you're not able to do it, you're upset with yourself. We don't want to just put everything on the offense. Yeah, the offense didn't score yesterday, but we could have got them in better position. We could have made a big play ourselves and won the game ourselves.
Tough to swallow today with just the 3 points on the scoreboard, but we will swallow it whole here for the next 3 hours. we will own that game and chew it over it with you. That's enough eating metaphors from me.
I am 803
803-0550, the number to call. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Your biggest takeaway from yesterday's Bills loss. Let us know what you think it is. Let's talk to Dan, who's driving home from the game. Dan, where are you right now?
I am, I don't know where I am. I'm on I-75.
I-75. Is there snow on the ground? Let's put it that way.
Let's put it this way, guys. My liver needs a break for the next 12 months.
Did you have fun down there in Jacksonville, Dan?
Oh, my God. I went to Lot X because that's where you guys were saying a lot of the Bills fans would be. And I took my buddy from Jacksonville. And it was funny. I had to be his bodyguard because, you know, people were really razzing him. And I'm like, whoa. South Park Avenue, I went to St. Francis High School. And they're like, all right, I guess he's okay. You know, so anyway. But they had so much fun. That was part of the whole game. The fans were just insane. I mean, 20,000 Bills fans there.
It was crazy.
So that was fantastic.
So where are you now? What state? I'm curious. You're coming up I-75. Let me guess. When did you leave?
This morning. I'm at Dade City. So.
Oh, you got a long way to go.
Not too bad. When you go to 301, you got to go the speed limit because there's speed traps everywhere on 301. So. But it's the most direct route to get back.
You're in Dade City, Florida?
Say again, please?
Where are you? Dade City, Florida?
Yeah, just north of Tampa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a long way
to
go.
Did you take a wrong turn?
Are you going south? Where are you going?
I'll be home in 20 minutes. But
I thought you were coming up here.
We thought you were coming up.
Oh, I know where Dade City is, yeah. So you live in Florida?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. You had me confused. I thought you were driving
up here.
Yeah, we
thought you were driving to Buffalo. Like, wait, are you going the wrong way, man?
No. I'm in Buffalo, and I've lived in Tampa for half.
I got you.
So, but I bleed red, white, and royal blue. And Donald, I loved when you played for us. I wish you still did.
Oh, thank you, man. Me too.
I will tell you this, guys. Tyrod was missing open receivers a lot.
Yeah.
Either I wasn't throwing to him, or he was throwing errant throws. I mean, seeing it live, because I had beautiful 50-yard line seats on the upper deck, and so I could see the whole field really well. Mm-hmm. And by the way, with all Bills fans, it was absolutely incredible. But it becomes so apparent you never see it on TV. You know what I mean? That he just, I don't know what he's seeing out there because, I mean, like, I was as badly as Bortles played, other than his running, we should have won that game. Yeah. I mean, like, there's no reason why we shouldn't have won that game. But I had a great time. It was great to be at the first playoff game in 17 years. Murph, I'm sorry I didn't get to listen to you because there's always a delay on NFL radio by 5 minutes. So you're never in real time, and I can't get the WGR except for the app, and that you guys don't play that.
Well, we can't. It's an NFL rule. You can't do it. You know, they want you to listen on Saturday.
I know. Yeah. So, but anyway, I just wanted to let you know, whenever I can't be in front of the TV on my DirecTV, I'm always listening to you, pal.
Okay.
That's about it. But listen, you guys have a great one. And you know what? I really believe in Bean and McDermott, as Sal said before he finished up. And we've got a bright future ahead of us. And I think Tyrod's got to go. I mean, we can't afford him, number one, for the way he's playing. That's it. Those are my thoughts.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
Quarterback.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about quarterbacks.
A lot.
Until the draft. Well, free agency first and then the draft. And we'll see what's going on. They still have to make a decision on Tyrod Taylor moving forward. But I will say this, and Dan talked about it. You have to really believe in all of the moves and everything that they made. From this point moving forward, you kind of have to believe in the moves that they make. You know, and there's going to be some ugly moves, I believe, in the offseason. Cap casualty type of guys that will be cut after this season. There will be guys who are free agents that they won't sign back. And guys are going to go out somewhere else and get money. But with all of the moves that Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean made, starting with the big trades back in the summertime, and everybody was saying that the team was tanking and all of that stuff, the fact that they were able to still win and get in the playoffs after making all of those moves, at this point, you might still question some moves, but you got to kind of believe in where they're going with this thing. And the guys that they bring in here, as they talk about so much with culture, I've been one of the guys, I'm not even going to lie to you, I've been one of the guys to say, man, that's a lot of talent you're letting get out the door. I understand you want a good culture. I understand you want a great culture in your building, in your locker room, but you also need some talent on the field. And they were able to actually get it done and get into the playoffs after making all of those moves. So from this point moving forward, I think the fan base should, I guess, trust in the process and believe in a lot of these moves that the coach and the GM is going
to
make.
Yeah, they've earned the right, you know, to make those moves. They've earned the benefit of the doubt because it worked. And I, for one, considered myself somewhat skeptical that they'd be able to do everything they set out to do this year, which was change the culture, get their type of players in here, establish a new standard for work and how they got things done around here. Ship out all that talent. I recall distinctly November 26th in the press box before the game at Kansas City thinking, you know, and it was Darius had gone, the Bills had lost three in a row, and I'm thinking, what have we done? You know, we've walked all that talent out the building, and in a three-game losing streak, you begin to think, what are we doing here? What's going on? And here they are. You know, they made it to the playoffs and changed the culture, at least the initial steps of changing the culture. And they're bringing in their type of players. And they survived a spate of injuries as well. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with what they've done. But it's still pretty tough to watch yesterday's game,
close
they were.
Yeah, it was definitely tough to watch. And that's why when you have a team that sits last – in the league and passing, all of that stuff, of course it's going to come back on a quarterback play. And we're going to talk about all of that stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about receivers. We're going to talk about so many holes on this team that it's going to make you upset. if you really want to sit back and think about it. This team needs a lot of work moving forward, but you have to be proud of what they were able to do this year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they made so many moves. They let so much talent go, and they still were able to find themselves in the tournament. And that's all you can ask for. The fact that they weren't able to get it done yesterday is very upsetting when you lose 10-3. But I think you got to be proud of the team, though.
All right, your biggest takeaway from yesterday's game, what did you take away from the wild card loss? Tony calling from Clarence. Tony, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, Murph. I did not watch that game. I let you be my eyes and ears.
Oh, excellent. Tony, how did I do?
I heard on the night, you know who I am. I trusted you on this. The entire game to me was a game of field position.
Mm-hmm.
Malone's whole objective was to pin the Bills in their between the 20 and the goal line and make them have to drive the ball 80 yards. That was it. And there was a point in the game where Colton Schmidt punted 36 yards. Their punter was averaging, according to your description, 51 and 52 yards to pin us deep. That whole game was based on field position.
Mm-hmm.
Bill started out on the 3-yard line on one of their drives. What kind of play calling can you call from the 3-yard line that can get you 97 yards. That's where the Bills got stuck. I mean, it was a game of field position. Everybody was laughing at Marone all week about the fact that he punched the ball. Well, yeah, he punted the ball all right and turned down the field goal, knowing the Bills could not drive that ball 97 yards. And they won the game based on their field position play. That's my opinion.
Okay, Tony, not a bad opinion, really. There's some points there. I mean, if you look at the overall stats at the end of the game, the difference in net punting between Nortman and Colton Schmidt was not that great, but Norton clearly was effective, 42 net, Colton Schmidt 40.6 net. And there was, a really good punt, several good punts by Colton Schmidt in that game, including, I mean, they totally flipped the field, Donald, on that one series. And Tony's right. The Bills started, I'm looking for it here, Bills started at their own 4-yard line, right? Mm-hmm. And kept the, they started at their 16-yard line. No, that's the wrong series. Here it is. Late first quarter, they started at their own 4-yard line and wound up pinning Jacksonville down at their 11. If you're playing field position, if you flip it from your 4 to their 11, you have done your job. Schmidt was part of that with a really nice directional punt. But there was one punt that Tony references. I think it was a 34-yarder mm-hmm. that was problematical for Colton Schmidt. And so many punts. There it is at the last minute of the half when Jacksonville wound up with their game-tying field goal. You're not going to get them all, but I don't think the difference between punters was that great. But it clearly was you're right about that, Tony. It clearly was a field position game.
It was totally a field position game. And Doug Marone felt like that defense felt like you're not going to be able to drive the ball consistently all the way down the field and score points on us. If we don't turn the ball over, we can play this field position game. We'll continue to run Leonard Fournette into a brick wall. But at some point, he's going to break one. At some point, he's going to break a 10-yarder, then a 15-yarder. He's going to get us close enough where we might be able to score. And that's exactly what they did, this Bills offense. And this has been an issue for this offense all year. You're not creating big plays from this offense. And when you're not able to create big plays and you're not a team that can drive the ball down the field and actually score touchdowns consistently without that happening from turnovers, that's an issue with your offense. You have to be able to get a big play here and there so that you can get yourself out of trouble or so that you can just spark something on your whole team. And that's not what they were able to do yesterday. It's been an issue all year. And that's why, as we'll talk about the future, but that's why you weren't able to win that game yesterday. You did not have any huge chunk plays. The biggest plays that you had yesterday got called back.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we're going to talk about, our likes and dislikes. I think one of the things that we forgot were penalties. There were key penalties on big plays, and you can't have that. That really hurt your field position. That really set your team back when you had those big plays.
803-0550, the number to call, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Here's Fred calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Fred. You're on the air.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I don't even know what to say. I was nauseated. I was nauseated by that game because, and I'll tell you the truth, after they did not run that ball on the first and goal, I stopped watching the game. I knew they were going to lose.
Really? You stopped? You turned,
they were going
you
to
turned the game off after before halftime. Is that what you're telling us, Fred? You turned the game off and didn't look again after halftime.
That's right, before halftime, absolutely.
Man. What'd you do the rest of the day?
Robert, I'm sorry?
What'd you do the rest of the day?
I did some work that I had to do at home. I cleaned my house.
You were curious? Were you curious at all about how that game, which was 3-0 at the time? Or no, it was scoreless at the time. You weren't curious how it might end?
But, John. Who called that play? I'd like to
know. Wait, no. You answer my question first. You weren't curious when it was a scoreless game that how the game might end? You just turned it off, walked away, cleaned the house?
I knew they were going to lose. I knew they were going to lose that game because how can you make that call? You can coach Little League. You can coach the little kids. Who made the call? I'd like to know. Was that Tyrod's call, or did he get it?
No, the offensive coordinator calls the plays. Rick Tennyson, there's no secret there. The report was that there was a run-pass option. He had the option to throw it or to run it. I'm sorry, am I talking or are you talking, Fred? You go first. Finish up. I'll let you go.
Well, why would he call a play like that? What is the reason for calling a play? You have a first and goal at the one-yard line. You have Shady McCoy, who's by that time, he's established himself. He's not hurting. He's not limping. He's not 90. He's not 100%. I agree. Mm-hmm. But he's probably 90, 95%. All right? You got him. You got a fullback, a 250-pound fullback. okay? What is your thought process in that? I don't understand the thought process.
Well, it's a question for the offensive coordinator, right. And it's certainly a play that I know the Bills would like to have back. Sean McDermott mentioned as much. They would like to have that play.
Yeah,
that,
the other thing.
I'm sorry. Let me finish. I'd let you finish. I'm sure it's a play they'd like to have back, and they said as much. They'd like to have that play back. If you know it's not going to work, you certainly don't call it. I would have run there as well. I would have run there as well with LeSean McCoy. Even Mike Tolbert, it was at 1.5 yards, you know, first and goal, 1.5 yards out. I would not have thrown it there. Go ahead. Let Donald go here for a second. Fred?
Yeah, Donald.
Go ahead, Donald. Fred says you can go. Fred says go ahead, Donald.
Oh, man. I'll say this. I even tweeted this out yesterday. You run the ball on first down. But I will say this. The report was that it was a run-pass option, all right? A run-pass option, Fred, means that the quarterback is going to go off of what he sees when he gets out there. You brought in Kelvin Benjamin because the dude is 6'5", 6'6". That's the reason why you brought him in. He's big time down in the red zone, fade balls and things like that. Run pass option. If I'm the quarterback, I get up to the line of scrimmage. If there's no safety help and there's one-on-one out there, I'm sorry. I'm not going to run LeSean McCoy into a brick wall. I'm going to throw it to Kelvin Benjamin. So that was what happened there. That's why they actually threw that. Now, if you want to say don't make it a run pass option, I understand that. But the report was, and LeSean McCoy said it after the game yesterday, it was a run pass option. So you can't even say Tyrod Taylor was wrong. There was one-on-one coverage down there, and they threw the fade ball.
Tough throw to make, which makes it even more problematical.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a tough throw.
Tyrod, as we know, is not the greatest, most accurate passer.
Right.
And
right.
What made it worse is the push-off by Kelvin Benjamin.
Right.
Because now instead of incomplete second and goal, 1.5 yards out, now it is it was a first and goal from the, 13? Or no, I'm sorry, after the penalty? After the penalty, they were back at the 11-yard line, and it was first and goal from the 11 after the penalty. That compounded the issue. But clearly, I think anybody would tell you they would have rather run there.
Yeah, I would have definitely run the ball there. First down, and you can argue this thing either way. You could say, well, you run the ball on first down, and you have second and third down to throw a fade ball. Or you throw a fade ball, and you don't get the completion there. You have second and third down to run the ball. I mean, you can argue it both ways on that. For me, first down, you run the ball. But you did bring in Kelvin Benjamin for that reason.
Play. Yep.
Right.
Nothing like hindsight to embolden people. You know what I mean? Hindsight. It's not just 2020. It's better than 2020. I mean, you would have done it differently if you were calling the play, if I were calling the play.
Yeah.
But with the benefit of hindsight, sure, it looks bad. It looks worse.
You know, for those who don't understand, that's why you do a run-pass option, so that it gives the quarterback your best – I mean, it's a 50-50 chance. Whatever you see out there, all right, this is what we have. If they have safety help over there, now we can run the ball because you don't have everybody stacked down in the box. So you're actually in a better situation. You just don't think you're going to end up with the pass interference. That's the whole issue in this thing. It's not the fact that you threw the ball. It's the fact that you got the pass interference and ended up back on the 10-12-yard line.
All right, we're going to take a break. Bills fans, time now to vote for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Your vote counts. It is powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Bills. Voting is open. We'll continue until tomorrow, and we'll announce a winner here on the show tomorrow. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com/POTW or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to vote. Our nominees, Preston Brown, Bills linebacker, LeSean McCoy, Buffalo running back, Lorenzo Alexander, Bills linebacker, or Kyle Williams, defensive tackle. The Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com/POTW or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. Speaking of Preston Brown, he's standing by. He's going to join us live next in studio when we continue. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The snap. Little stretch run right side. This time, Shady has room across the 30. Spins away from a man. Out to the 45, and he steps out of bounds at midfield. LeSean McCoy gets loose downfield with a great run and a great spin after the run. He got 25 yards on that carry.
That's the Hilbert College call of the game. At Hilbert, the community, the feeling, and the values are different. See Hilbert College. See differently. Go to Hilbert.edu/see different. He looked pretty healthy on that run, Donald, and a couple of others. He got 74% of the snaps on offense, Shady.
And it went over, I mean, you talk about yards from scrimmage, over 100 yards. He had a Shady game.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a typical Shady game. You could see him limping and everything out there.
Right.
But, I mean, he gutted that game out. You can't really take anything away from him.
Didn't know that was coming. Joining us in studio right now in our next segment, he is the leading tackler in the National Football League. He was on the field for just about all of it yesterday. In fact, 100% of the snaps, as usual, for our next guest, Preston Brown, Bills linebacker, in studio with us. Preston, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the season, really, as you look back. Led the league in tackles, part of a pretty good Buffalo defense, and broke the playoff drought. There's some real things you can hang on your wall from this past season, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you reached a lot of your personal goals and your team goals as well. I mean, to be in the playoffs and just the whole feeling of the city and all that it meant, it was a good year. But we know we had more plans and more goals. But I mean, it's a start.
After you lead the league in tackles, how sore are you now? We were just talking about the season is over, and you're like, man, I need some time to rest now. Yeah. How sore are you?
I'm pretty good. I mean, I really don't get that sore yet. I mean, you see Zoe walking around because he's 45 and he looks really sore.
Because he's 45.
But I feel like I could play right now if we had to play again. I mean, I think I do a good job of not really getting sore. I mean, I kind of like it. So,
Preston, 6 tackles for you yesterday, 2 of them for losses. And overall, the defense did a really good job of keeping Leonard Fournette in check. Mm-hmm. What was the plan and how did you manage to accomplish that with Fournette?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing was just staying our gap. I mean, D-line did a great job. And linebackers coming downhill, pulling the doubles off of those guys. So that was the big thing all week, staying in your gap, coming downhill. And they hit us with a couple play actions because we were doing so well at just coming downhill. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that was the plan. I think we did good at it.
What was tackling Fournette like? I mean, you hear how hard he runs. What was that like?
Yeah, he definitely runs hard. I mean, one time I hit him in the hole. And I thought I was getting trucked, but I looked back and Eddie was pushing him. I was like, he ain't this strong. Like, I was like, come on now. So Eddie gave him a little extra boost, but I mean, he definitely is a strong running back.
They didn't get much offense going at all, and they had problems throwing the ball. But around about late second quarter, there was like a 20-yard run by Blake Bortles, and then they went back to it in the second half. What happened there that allowed them to hit those big runs from Bortles?
Yeah, those quarterback runs, I mean, that was really the biggest part of their offense, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it was devastating. I mean, with third and whatever, all those zone reads, he's pulling it and then turning up the field. I mean, I've lost to Blake Bortles too many times in my career. I mean, going back to college, only team that beat me in college, and then in London. I mean, I'm just tired of losing to Blake Bortles.
Especially when you're losing on his legs and not even with him throwing the ball, as he rushed for more yards than he passed yesterday. But was there a point in the game where, I mean, Blake Bortles is not a typical guy that you say we need to spy.
Mm-hmm.
But when he starts running like that yesterday, are you guys saying to each other, we might need to spy him?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, I mean, you look up his 40, he's a 4'8". He doesn't look like he has that much athleticism in him, but he's just a gamer. I mean, he finds a way to get down the field. And I was telling Eddie, like, he told me Eddie said he ran a 4.6 at the pro day, and I didn't see any of that trying to chase Blake Bortles 4.8 around the corner. So, I mean, he just has football intelligence and speed. It worked for him.
There were read option runs from him, as you said, but scrambles too, and that kind of kills you because you got guys, you know, deep into a play, right,
mm-hmm.
And you're dropping back into coverage, so there's room over there for a guy who typically doesn't run. That it was almost like the scrambles hurt worse than the read option runs that he had.
Yeah, I mean, those are the toughest for us because once you start scrambling, we have to plaster those receivers, and they just start – I mean, it's like playing a game of tag. They're running all over the place, and you got to stay in their hips, so we're all turned basically like two men. You're not looking anymore, so then he scrambles, and we can't help because we're all looking, so that's the toughest part.
The one play – that probably had to hurt the most. And out of all of the runs that he had was the one where it was a pass. He drops the snap, and you it looked like you guys were about to come up with the sack, and then
uh-huh.
he still runs for a first down.
Yeah, I think that's the time I had some bad body language after the play. I mean, it was just when you see them drop the ball, I mean, everybody usually gets a little faster. I mean, you thought, okay, he's going to throw out of bounds, we're going to get a sack. And then you see him running down the sideline again. I mean, it's definitely devastating to see that happen.
You know, we're here focusing on the defense. Obviously, you play defense, but the defense limited them to just one touchdown, 10 points. Typically, that would win a lot of games for you in this league, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. I mean, I feel like we could have shut them out. I mean, if we played how we could have. I mean, going back to when Tate had that nice return before halftime, and then we get a penalty, we get pushed back, then we get a 3-and-out or whatever, then they punt, then they get the ball right there. I mean, it all works together. So we all have to work together on 3 phases to be better, and I think we could have limited them to no points, and we did a good job on the goal line. I mean, they got that last 4th-down play, and we got to find ways to get better.
I mean, it's one thing to lose a playoff game. You feel like you're so close to – man, we're finally in the tournament now. We can make a run at this thing, but to lose it 10-3 has to hurt worse.
Yeah, it definitely tough. I mean, once you're in it, I mean, you just have dreams of, all right, we're going to the Super Bowl, blah, blah, blah. But when you go out there and lose 10-3, I mean, it's like, man, we really had a chance all the way to the last play. We had a chance to win it, go for two. I mean, we're all thinking about, all right, we still got a chance, we're going to win this. And to lose like that, I mean, it's definitely tough.
We're in studio with Preston Brown, Bills linebacker, just finishing his locker clean out here in One Bills Drive on this day after the season ended. Take us inside, if you would, the locker room yesterday after the game, Preston. How deflating was it? How bad did it feel in there?
Yeah, it was – I mean, everybody was down. I mean, a lot of guys tearing up. It just wasn't – it wasn't fun. I mean, we had so much emotion last Sunday. I mean, on cloud nine, it just dropped all the way back down. It definitely is tough. But, I mean, guys going around congratulating each other on just a great season that we had together and the camaraderie and all the family that we became. But – it definitely is tough to lose the way we did.
Part of the camaraderie and family extended to the fans and that amazing reception just, 8 days ago now coming home from Miami. And still, folks there, fans there last night at the airport, mm-hmm. they had to feel pretty good, I would think, last night.
Yeah, I mean, we got the best fans out of any sport. I mean, they're out there cold, whatever, 17 years, how many years it been? They're out there each and every week. And to be out there in the cold when we made the playoffs and be out there when we got eliminated from the playoffs, I mean, it just shows the passion that these fans has for this team.
And fans in the stands in Jacksonville, there are thousands, maybe 20,000 even in that mm-hmm. stadium. Did you feel like it was not your typical road game with all that Buffalo support in the stands there yesterday?
Yeah, that was great. I mean, to see so much blue, white, and red, all the fans going crazy. It looked like the whole top section. You look up there, it looked like all Buffalo. I mean, it was definitely something I have never seen before. I mean, to be our first playoff game, and for everybody just go down there. I mean, we are a part of this community, so they all felt like they made the playoffs, and they were all down there having fun.
You've gone through this before, locker cleanout day. Mm-hmm. How was today different than maybe the previous three you've been around?
Yeah, I mean, you don't know if you're going to be back this year, so you got to take your flip-flops or something that you would leave here because you know they'll be there. You got to clean out a little bit more and just knowing you never know. So it definitely was a little tougher this time.
I mean, you have to obviously clean out your locker, but there's also the element of there are a lot of guys on this team that are free agents. A lot of guys, even if you're not back and all those guys are back, there are a lot of guys you might not see next year mm-hmm. that you've been working with for a long time now.
Yeah, that's the weird part. I mean, it's like you're with a guy every single day since April. I mean, you're always around the people, talking to the people, but you're like, wow, I might not ever see you again after today, which is a crazy fact, but I mean, it's – this is the way life is. I mean, you say, oh, I'll see your high school friends. You don't see them again. Oh, I'll see your college friends. You don't see them again. Yeah. But hopefully I'm back here in Buffalo and everybody else is here too so we can keep continuing to build this thing.
Well, you are going into free agency. I know there's a long way to go until you make decisions, but what's your outlook? What do you want to happen moving forward into the next few months here?
I want to be here. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, to come back here and be with this community, with – the people upstairs, the janitors, Rick in the mailroom. I mean, everybody here is just,
maybe less.
You guys.
Thank you.
So, I mean, that's the ultimate goal, to remain here.
I mean, ultimately, now that you guys have made it in, I think everybody around the league can see what Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean are doing here. Mm-hmm. That has to play in your mind in terms of wanting to come back. I mean, all guys say, I want to come back here, but now the fact that you can actually see this thing on the uptick, mm-hmm. it has to play in your mind.
Definitely. I mean, you look back at the season, see, y'all could have had 11 wins. You go Carolina, Bengals. I mean, those games that you could have won. So going into next year, hopefully now we are learning how to win, that those games will be wins. So, mm-hmm. I mean, just with the defense and the guys and the coaching staff that we have, I mean, I just love to be around them for a longer time.
Preston, good luck to you. I hope we get a chance to have you back in here again. Don't forget your flip-flops when you leave the facility. But thanks for coming in here. We appreciate it. Congratulations on an outstanding season, too.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Preston Brown, Bills linebacker, the leading tackler in the National Football League, in studio with us. We'll hear more from you on the telephone line when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Now the snap. Bortles back to throw. He's going to be sacked. He's dropped back at the 27-yard line. Lorenzo Alexander in there to drop him. Lorenzo Alexander with the Advanced Alarm Defensive Player of the Game. Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Preston Brown played well yesterday. Lorenzo Alexander really played his best game of the year. Ten tackles, one sack, two tackles for losses, one quarterback hit. Not just on the stat sheet. He was making plays all over the place yesterday.
Lorenzo played like, and this is not to say anything against any of the young guys, but he played like a veteran who had been in the playoffs before.
Mm-hmm.
He came out. I mean, he was shooting gaps, things that we saw. He played like he was playing last year. That's really how he played. He got up on the line of scrimmage, had a sack. He was shooting gaps, making tackles in the backfield. I mean, he looked like he was a young Lorenzo Alexander. I was happy to see him out there actually make the plays that he did yesterday.
Yeah, good for him. Hey, time now for Game Rewind to look back at some of the top calls in yesterday's game. Game Rewind presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills. The Bills are back in the playoffs, and it feels pretty good. Here's what you waited for, Buffalo. The Bills in the playoffs, 3rd and 7. Bills at the Jacksonville 20. No score in this game. They've gone back and forth. Who's going to blink first? Shady McCoy lines up as a slot receiver, right side. Tyrod alone in the backfield. Here's the snap. Steps up in the pocket. Tyrod going to keep it himself on the run at the 15. And he is brought down at the 11-yard line. Should be enough for a first down. Husk is ready, and a flag goes down.
Richard's under traction. Defense. The yardage from that penalty results in a first down.
Yes, it does. First down, Buffalo. Deep in Jacksonville territory. So now the Bills can punch it in. First and goal from the 2. Down to 2:53 left first half. DeMarco, the fullback. Shady behind him. Tyrod under center. Snap. Going to throw it on first down. Into the end zone. Incomplete for Calvin Benjamin. And the flag goes down. Coverage over there by Jalen Ramsey. He's been battling all day.
It's on Calvin.
On Calvin.
Yeah. He's going to call a penalty on Calvin on a push-off.
Pass interference. Offense.
From the left hash. Wind should be behind him if there's any wind at all. Here we go. Snap is down. Hoskins kick. Plenty of leg. It is up. It is good. The Bills have the lead with 1:49 left to play in the half. They finally get some points on the board in this game. Here's the snap now. 2nd and 10 at the Buffalo 33. Bortles bounced around in trouble. Now he's going to run again. Left side, and he is cut down after he picks up the first down just outside the 20-yard line. A 12-yard scramble. Ramon Humber made the tackle. This for the tie with 7 seconds left in the first half. Snap is down. Lambeau's kick is on the way, and it is good. The game is tied. 4th and goal at the 1. Cornette the tailback. Bohannon the fullback. Bortles under center. Snap. He's going to throw it. Fires into the end zone, and he's caught. Touchdown, the tight end, Ben Koyak. 3rd down and 5. Tyrod takes a long look downfield. Can't find anybody. Going to keep it himself and run with it, and he is hammered down to the ground. After a 1-yard pickup, Dante Fowler brought him down. Now they got to hurry. 1:32, 1:31, 1:30 left in the game, and Tyrod is down. 34 seconds left. No timeouts. Down by 7. Here we go. Peterman. Back to throw. Looks right. Gets rid of it quickly. It is tipped, and it is intercepted. Picked off by Jalen Ramsey. Picked off, and the Jaguars will get this victory. The Buffalo Bills' miracle dream season comes to an end as the sun sets in Jacksonville. And the sun set on the Bills' season with that loss. It's Game Rewind presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills. We're talking to you about that game, and what is your key takeaway from that game? Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Adam calling from Atlanta. Go ahead, Adam. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Hi. I'm actually driving back on I-75.
Everybody's on I-75 yeah. today.
Like your first caller.
Okay. So. If you see him, wave to him. Daniel, his name was.
Yep. Hey, I just wanted to ask, you know, it seems like everybody's big takeaway is that Tyrod Taylor as a quarterback's missing a lot of open receivers in the passing game. But as you look back on the year now that it's over, it feels like this is the first year in his career that he's ever been asked to try and win games throwing the football. It seems like he's had coaches, whether as a backup in Baltimore or with Rex Ryan here in Buffalo, that asked him, simply don't turn the ball over, take some shots deep, or take the safe, easy throw, and let the running game and the defense win games for us. And so if that's true, you know, I'd like to know your thought if that's true as someone who's the voice of the Bills and around the team a lot. And then if so, does that maybe allow him to have more growth potential than maybe most people give him credit for looking forward?
You know what, Adam? That's a good question and a thoughtful question, but I don't think that's the case, and I want Donald to weigh in on this. They need a passing attack that complements what they're doing on the ground. You know, the Bills, second in the league in the percentage of runs they call, running plays, second to Jacksonville, as a matter of fact, like 48-49%. They've tried all season to establish the run, stay with the run, but you have to have an element of a passing attack, and it's been tough. I mean, 31st in the league in passing yardage per game. Yes, open receivers missed on too often. You need a complementary passing attack, even if you want to be a running team, which I believe the Bills want to do, and I believe they have wanted to do for 3 years now. But the passing attack's been pretty substandard. Your thoughts, Donald?
I think you can't consistently just count on your run attack, because you're going to come up against defenses that can shut down your run game, like a Jacksonville, like a Carolina.
Jacksonville had eight guys in the box virtually the
right.
entire game.
And that's
they
a very
that
good defense.
Right down there. Barry Church was right down there as a linebacker the whole
Let me
game.
Tell you something. They could just leave Calais Campbell down there. He'll make plays himself. Yeah. That dude is
you're
a
right.
mountain. But, I mean, you can't just rely on that because it allows teams to do things like that consistently. Put eight in the box. You can't beat us on the outside. And then if that team does have good corners – They just don't respect your passing game at all. So you need to be at least 15, 16 in the league in passing. You're dead last, almost dead last in passing every year. I mean, that's not going to work in this league. So, yeah, they need more from the quarterback. They need more from the wide receivers. But it starts with the quarterback play. They need more receivers to be hit when they're open. You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is Tyrod does miss receivers down the field. That's been one of the things that he's been doing, I guess, his whole career. Since he's been here, he's missed guys that are open down the field. All quarterbacks do. He might do it a little bit more. So I think that's one of the things that they're probably going to look at. It might be one of the first things that they look at.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com will join us, get his report from the locker room. We'll hear some of the sound from the Buffalo Bills locker room. And, of course, more of your phone calls, your takeaway. What was your biggest takeaway from yesterday's wild card playoff loss? The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where it is locker cleanout day. The Buffalo Bills season over after their 10-3 loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars in the AFC wildcard game yesterday. Tyrod Taylor left the game in concussion protocol. He did not speak to the media today on locker cleanout day. Several others did. We'll hear from them, and we'll hear from Chris Brown, Bills Insider, at BuffaloBills.com coming up just a moment from now on the show. So the division round is set. In the NFL playoffs, it starts Saturday, 4:30 in the afternoon, with an NFC divisional playoff between the Falcons and the Eagles in Philadelphia, followed by the Tennessee Titans and the New England Patriots Saturday night. On Sunday, AFC divisional playoff first, Jacksonville at Pittsburgh at 1:05, followed by the Saints and the Vikings at 4:40. The division round is set for the NFL playoffs. Derrick Henry expected to be the Titans' starting running back in their game against the Patriots on Saturday night, according to Mike Mularkey. He's not yet ready to rule out veteran running back DeMarco Murray, but even if Murray finds a way to play, it is said it would be in a complimentary role. Carolina Panthers are answering questions from the NFL after quickly clearing quarterback Cam Newton to play yesterday, less than 2 weeks after a league mandate asking for more extensive concussion testing for players who demonstrate obvious symptoms. Bills personnel assistant Brian Gain, the Bills vice president of player personnel, now considered the favorite for the Houston Texans general manager's job, according to ESPN. The New England Patriots rejected Houston's request to interview Patriots director of player personnel Nick Caserio for the job. Second time in 7 years, two teams from the Southeastern Conference will meet with a college football national championship on the line. It is number 2 Georgia and number 4 Alabama tonight in the 2018 College Football National Playoff Championship. For the Georgia Bulldogs, it's an opportunity decades in the making. They've not played for a national title since 1983. And the Buffalo Sabres made some roster moves this morning before practice. Defenseman Brendan Gooley and goaltender Linus Ullmark are now up with the team. The Sabres practicing today, and they have a game tomorrow night. Winnipeg Jets, 7 o'clock at KeyBank Center. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio, joined in studio by our buddy Chris Brown, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com. Brownie, welcome to the offseason.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
A little abrupt, but, you know, that's kind of the way it goes when you get to the postseason.
I was saying to Donald, this one hurts a lot, and I'm sure Bills fans feel this, for a number of reasons, including the fact that last week was so spectacular and really so unexpected. One. Two, this one was an eminently winnable game yesterday. It doesn't take much to think that the Bills could be getting ready to play on Saturday night in New England.
Right. In going down into the bowels of the stadium, even before I got to the locker room, I just kept kind of replaying the game in my head, and it reminded me the most of the Week 2 game at Carolina. Mm-hmm. It played out almost exactly the same way. Points were hard to come by. Defense played great, and 3 points just simply wasn't enough. I mean, that's the way the game went. And there were drop passes that cost them opportunities in that game in Carolina in Week 2. There were drop passes in this game that cost them opportunities to keep drives alive, penalties. Even to get points. Yeah, there were penalties that were not good. There were sacks that were taken that set them back behind the chains. You know, still in all, you look at that game at halftime, Jacksonville's 1-for-7 on third down, and the Bills are like 4-for-7 or 5-for-8 or something like that. And you're thinking, okay, you know, Jacksonville's going to get the ball first here in the second half, but if you can still keep Leonard Fournette in check, which, as Murph knows, was my key to the game yesterday, you know, I was hopeful that, you know, the offense could find some kind of spark in the second half and do enough, you know, to take the lead in that game. But I was of the firm belief that the team that scored next after halftime was probably going to win that football game as long as it was a touchdown, and that proved to be the case.
Shouldn't be that way, you know?
No, I mean, no, it shouldn't. But Jacksonville's nothing much to write home about either from an offensive perspective.
No, I mean, their biggest offense was Blake Bortles' legs.
And yeah, I think he finished with more rushing yards than passing yards.
Yeah, 87. So, I mean, that's not – and I think you even pointed it out last week. Blake Bortles can move a little bit. He's not a mobile quarterback, but he knows how to get out of there. He did it last year against the Bills, back in London against the Bills a couple of years ago. And it came back to really haunt them yesterday. That was the drive that actually they ended up going to score on. He had a couple of big plays with his legs.
He was eminently confused by the Bills disguising their coverages. This isn't the first quarterback who we have seen hesitate, look unsure of himself in terms of where to go with the football. Even Tom Brady, in the first meeting here with the Patriots at New Era Field, was hesitating and did not have a good game. So I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, the job that Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde have done back there all season to really cross up quarterbacks. Bill Belichick mentioned it in the conference call a few weeks ago. He said, you do not see this a lot in the league, the way these guys are able to kind of hold their water before the snap, hold the disguise, technically be out of position at the snap of the ball, and then get back to where they're supposed to be. And things did change a little bit when Hyde went out of the game. Not to any great degree, but there was a difference. And who knows? Does Micah Hyde come up with that potential interception that Colt Anderson can't come up with that goes through his arms? Maybe he does. You know, there's a lot of what-ifs in that game, but I just never got the sense that the offense was ever going to get on track. Once we got about midway through the third quarter, it was just evident to me that it was just not there, and it was going to take a takeaway and potential takeaway for a score for the Bills to tie this football game, as sad as that sounds.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com in studio with us. You are welcome to join us as well. I want to get your thoughts on our Twitter poll, Chris, as we like to do on the day after games. Want people to isolate the one big takeaway, and certainly, as we all know, there are a million things that go into any game, win or lose. But on Twitter, we're asking people, what is the biggest takeaway from Sunday's game in Jacksonville? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Right now, 83% say the struggles of the passing game. Hard to argue with that. 13% say problems in the red zone. 1% say the lack of defensive takeaways. 3% have something else in mind. Passing game struggles is sort of a broad topic, Chris, but I do think it covers what the biggest biggest issue for the Buffalo Bills was in this game.
I think there are other forces that agree with that.
Right?
But your first choice there kind of leads to the second choice, quite frankly.
Yes.
I mean, If you don't have passing game struggles, you don't have red zone struggles because you're getting there more often. And you only got there once. For that matter, both teams only got there once. The defense is, you know, really did a nice job. But I think also there was – the offenses had something to say about that too due to their ineptitude, both teams. But, yeah, the passing game just flat out isn't good enough.
Right.
On several levels. The question that has to be answered here going forward is this a quarterback problem? Is this primarily a quarterback problem, a play calling problem, or a receiving core problem? It could be all of the above. But what's first? And because I think you can slice this a lot of different ways. A lot of the blowback I was getting from Twitter from Bills fans was, this play calling's awful. I can't take it. We got to change the coordinator, this, that, and the other. Well, the reason they're upset about the play calling is because there was only one shot in the red zone to make the right call. And I think we can argue 17 ways to Sunday about the decision on first and goal from the one to go to Kelvin Benjamin. The bottom line is this. It was a read pass option play. The way it works is if you see Kelvin Benjamin in one-on-one, you're going to throw him the football because that means there's an extra guy in the box to stop the run and the numbers are bad there. So you go with the better option, which is Kelvin Benjamin, a 6'5" receiver with arms like a condor to make a play for you in the passing game. I think at worst they're saying we have a quarterback who doesn't throw interceptions. At worst, we're second and goal from the two after an incomplete pass. I think that's what everybody on the Bills sideline is thinking, knowing that's the choice that we're going with here in one-on-one coverage.
Right.
Not only is it an incomplete pass, it's offensive pass interference, and now you're on the 11-yard line. I don't think anybody could have fathomed that being the outcome of that play.
And the call was legit.
The call was legit.
You can't extend.
No. The penalty is completely legit. I'm not debating that. I'm just saying, what you're anticipating going in is at worst you're getting an incompletion, maybe a 1 in 1,000 chance that you're throwing an interception there, because it has happened this season down there twice, one on a deflected pass, one on a bad decision by Tyrod. But I don't think anybody had offensive pass interference first and goal at the 11 as the possible outcome there. And I think that is what completely upset the apple cart there. And then – you know, what was it, 3rd and 2, I think. To me, that is the play of the game. Calais Campbell stopping Tyrod Taylor.
That was before the first.
Yes, it was.
Oh, it was before. Okay.
Yeah, was before.
So I've got my order out of whack. But that, to me, is the play of the game there. Because at the very least, Tyrod has a first down. I think he even has a chance to be in the end zone.
Oh, I think he was headed in the end zone. And Calais Campbell reached out and tripped him up.
I mean, at the very least, he's got a first down and a fresh set of downs, you know, inside the 5. I think he's possibly in the end zone, probably in the end zone, and we're not even talking about this first and goal play from the 1.
You know, I
play of the game.
I said this yesterday, and I said it earlier. I probably would have run the ball on first down. But, like you said, the run-pass option is there for a reason. And people complained all year, man, does Tyrod Taylor have the type of relationship where he can go out there and make decisions himself? Well, now he had to make a decision himself. He actually made the right decision to throw the fade ball. That's why you brought Kelvin Benjamin in there, you know, because if they bring an extra guy in the box, you got one-on-one, you throw the ball to Kelvin Benjamin. That's why you do that. And quarterbacks do that all across the league. It just wasn't executed to perfection because you got the pass interference. You didn't get the completed pass. But I don't think that's the reason why people should be upset on play calling. If you want to complain about other calls throughout the course of the game, I'm totally fine with that one. But that play right there is a run-pass option for a reason.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, I know people have come down hard on Coach Dennison when they haven't been happy with some of the decisions that were made, the personnel that's been utilized in certain down and distance situations. But I think we also have to recognize the fact that this is a passing game that has distinct limitations. And so, you know, we've talked here on this show, I've talked with you more than once about adjustments in the second half and why this team struggles coming out of the locker room in games where they've gotten off to good starts, the Miami games, for example. You have to wonder, and people like Murph and I and fans in general, may not know this to the degree that Donald does or other players who have played in the league. What are the limitations that Coach Dennison is operating under with a quarterback who has limitations? How many adjustments can he realistically make come the second half? How handcuffed is he because of the quarterback he's using? I don't know. I don't have that answer, but I have that question.
Right.
And I wonder if that is going to be taken into consideration when a person like Rick Dennison is evaluated at the end of the year, much like Tyrod's going
to
be evaluated.
And I would just want to add receivers to that list, too, of potential limitations.
Oh, yeah.
It's not all Tyrod. He's,
no, it's not.
He's working with some inexperienced guys, Zay Jones, Deontay Thompson, really limited experience in the league. I mean, there's some serious limitations.
Across the board. You're going to look across the board. Everybody in the passing game. Receivers, tight ends, even though your tight ends played a pretty good year this year. Quarterback, offensive coordinator, you have to look at everybody, but number one, you're probably going to look at your quarterback first.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just the reality of
right.
the NFL. You're going to look at your quarterback first and say, can this guy actually make the plays that we need him to make in this offense? Yeah. If not, then we have to figure out that first, and then we can go with the receivers next.
And I think it's fair to say that there were probably about four drops yesterday mm-hmm. in the passing game, plays that should have been made by receivers, and there were about five throws that Tyrod missed yesterday mm-hmm. where there were opportunities to make plays. The over-the-middle pass to O'Leary being in the red zone being one of the biggest right. ones where O'Leary couldn't even jump. I mean, his catch radius is limited to begin with because, you know, he's not a loose
right, right.
kind of
he's a little stiff.
Athlete. He's a little stiff, right. So you've really got to put it on him for him to make a play for you. If you do that, he's more often than not going to make a play. But even he had a drop yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's a situation where yesterday was a combination of failures in the passing game between drops, missed throws, not seeing things in a timing-based offense on time. You know, you got guys running free. You're saying to yourself, pull the trigger, and Tyrod instead is pulling it down and taking off to buy time.
Here's a question. Did at all yesterday, did you think, as we're talking about drops and different plays that weren't made, did you think this stage might be too big for the guys on the field?
Well, it's a new stage mm-hmm. to a lot of those guys on the field. I mean, I don't know if Deontay Thompson's ever played in a playoff game. Kelvin Benjamin missed the whole playoff run to the Super Bowl with the Panthers because mm-hmm. he was out with an ACL injury. O'Leary has not been in a playoff game. Zay Jones has not been in a playoff game. I mean, we're getting pretty deep down the list here
yeah.
in terms of playoff experience.
I don't think Charles Clay either.
I don't know if the moment was too big for them per se. I do feel like this is a passing game that just right now at this point in time flat out isn't good enough to carry an offense. And that's why this team did rely on a running game. But when you've got LeSean McCoy gutting it up and playing the way he did yesterday, you almost feel bad for him because all he needs is complimentary football in the passing game, yeah. and he can't get it. The passing game barely outgained LeSean McCoy on the ground,
right.
and LeSean McCoy was your leading receiver. So it's just the simple answer here, guys, is it's just got to be better. Whether you feel you need a better quarterback who can raise the level of those receivers to be better players. I mean, that's the queen on the chessboard here, guys. It's the quarterback. Because if he's better and he can give you more consistent ball location, then the level of play of your receivers goes up as well. And I think we've seen examples in this league where, I mean, you can go to the Aaron Rodgers injury in Green Bay. Brett Hundley's a nice young quarterback and got better as the weeks went on for them in the 6-7 games that he had to play while Rodgers was out with a broken collarbone. But when Rodgers goes out, the level of play and performance of a lot of those players in the receiving core went down because the level of play at quarterback went down.
Mm-hmm.
So logic says you raise the level of play at your quarterback position, it's easier to raise all the other boats as well. That's the easy answer. It's not the easy solution,
right.
as we've seen here for the better part of the last 20 years of the quarterback position.
You're talking about LeSean McCoy gutting it out. Were you at all surprised yesterday that Marcus Murphy didn't get a touch?
A little surprised. I thought, okay, you know, Shady looks good here in the early going. There's not a lot of openings there mm-hmm. in the run game. But, you know, he's doing what he can here. I really did think that you know, at some point in time, Marcus Murphy would get half a dozen touches. Mm-hmm. Just to add a little change of pace there. His skill set is similar to McCoy, but he runs differently. And I thought that might be a nice curveball to throw with the Jacksonville defense, even for a handful of carries.
Chris Brown in studio with us. We'll take a few phone calls for you about yesterday's game. Kate in Tonawanda. Go ahead, Kate. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. I think the big issue is really the OC. I think we need a new OC. I mean, I'm somebody who watches football from, you know, August to the first week of February, and I'm sitting at home going, oh, we're running it to the right. Oh, we're passing it on the right side. Oh, this is a screen. And, I mean, if you want to go up against one of the best defenses in the league, you got to at least be able to outsmart me when I'm sitting at home on my couch. I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean –
I think you should write a book about your play prognostications, Kate, if you can do it that well.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Predictability is, for me, it's all about execution, number one. People have talked about them being predictable all year. Yesterday, well, this week, we talked to a bunch of different national guys, and they said, well, they need to be good on first down, play action on first down. They did that yesterday. Mm-hmm. I don't remember thinking in the game yesterday was predictable. I'll go back and watch the game a little bit more.
They were moving the ball.
A little bit.
Yeah.
They were moving the ball. It seemed like once they got around midfield, that's kind of when the wall went up. But, you know, as Donald referenced, execution was an issue yesterday.
Yeah.
Particularly in the passing game.
Kind of
I mean, I already said, I mean, you probably left 10 plays on the field mm-hmm. yesterday. And in a game as tight as that, not having half of those 10 plays makes a difference it potentially between winning and losing. And then there were some bad penalties. I mean, LeSean McCoy's over 100 yards rushing if Deontay Thompson doesn't hold that guy on a downfield block.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were big plays that were taken off the board from penalty, and there were missed plays because of lack of execution. Drop passes, missed throws. The passing game is what really let this team down yesterday, maybe more than any other part of the offense.
This has been all year. This is not just
well. They finished 31st for a reason,
right?
Yeah. I mean, they finished 31st for a reason.
Thanks for your call, Kate. Let's go to Rob calling from Queens, New York. Rob, go ahead. You're on the air with us. Chris Brown's with us. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, Rob. How you doing? I'm sorry. Hey, Chris,
that's okay.
Hey, that's Rob. Okay, Rob.
Chris and John and Donald, first of all, Happy New Year to you and all the best to your families in 2018.
Thank you, man. Same to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a question for Donald, but I'm going to start out by saying this. I've seen quarterback play that is far inferior to what Tyrod Taylor has shown, and teams continue to win. I think with these two first-round picks here, we need to not move up in the draft because we're not going to be able to move up to the one or two spots to get Darnold or Rosen because Cleveland needs a quarterback. They passed on once before. They're not going to let that happen again. Of course, the Giants are up there. They need to, with the first two picks, get a defensive tackle, and then I would get a linebacker. But with those second-round picks in which they have two, receiver and running back. Mm-hmm. And the question I have for Donald is, Donald, these receivers are possession receivers. We don't have any vertical threats like when you were on the field. If I am any type of defensive back, I am not afraid of what they have on the perimeter as far as vertical speed. I don't think anybody can get past me. Sure, I got a 6'5", 240-pound guy. He ain't running past me. And Zay Jones, I don't want to call the young man a bust, but he has dropped too many passes early on in his career. And I know at East Carolina, when I watched him play, he got all those receptions and he was basically 5 and 10 yard outs. So if you had your GM hat on, Chris, obviously you're close to the team. John, you do an amazing job, you know, on the radio. And Donald, who is a former player, what would you do? Because I just feel they need more weapons, and they also need a running back behind Shady because he doesn't scare me either. So I'm just going to hang up. I'd love to hear your comments, but this draft and the offseason, when we're $40 million under the cap, we can get some players in here. And once again, I'm not saying Tyrod Taylor's Brady or Breeze. I don't think any of us are saying that. But please get him some help. What other quarterback have we taken starting receivers away from him and say, guess what, guy? I want you to just continue on and win again. Thanks a lot. Right.
Thanks, Rob.
There's a lot there, but Rob, I'll just say this. There's a long list of things they're going to need in the draft. So they can go anyway.
Add it to the list.
Add it to the list. You know, I mean, we talk about the weapons on offense. We talk about quarterback. I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't go defensive tackle or linebacker in the first round. You know, I mean, there's so many holes on this team. For me, yeah, you do need a number one wide receiver out there on the field, or at least a vertical threat. You need a guy who can get down the field, a guy who consistently threatens the defense. Because if you don't have that, then you're not going to be able to back these defenses out of your box. All right, you need a number one wide receiver. You need a backup running back to help out LeSean McCoy. You need both of those things. But, there's a long list.
Getting a little older up front, too.
Right. You know, I mean, there's so many different ways that they can go. That's why free agency is going to be big. That's why the draft is going to be big. That's why I said there are going to be some cap casualty guys that people are going to be upset that they actually have to release. They have to create some space to bring talent and fill some holes on this team.
Take a call from Scott in Tonawanda. Hello, Scott. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, I just had a quick comment. I listen to all you guys all the time. Chris, I'm glad to hear you on here today, too. But as far as our quarterback play is just terrible. You know what I mean? I mean, you look at Tyrod, I like him personally, but he's terrible. And if we had somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo here or Kirk Cousins, I mean, this team would be, like, our offense would be way better, way different. And right now, we're going to be able to have the money to get one of those two guys and the draft picks. I would really like Jimmy Garoppolo.
What makes you – I got to stop you.
San Fran is not – they're
it's
not
– happening. Guy hasn't lost.
San Fran is going to give him the key to the city. I mean, he's not getting out of there.
He hasn't lost since he started games out there. What would he finish, 5-0?
True.
And he hasn't – I don't think he's lost a career start since 2013 at Eastern Illinois. I mean, he's the real deal.
He's for real.
He's not going anywhere. Kyle Shanahan can't stop smiling right now.
Right.
Because he got that guy for a second-round pick. The best news for Bills fans regarding Jimmy Garoppolo is he's not in your division anymore because that would have just been a pass-the-torch thing, and it would have been another 10 years of New England dominating the division. If he was the starting quarterback as early as next year for the Patriots, because he is the real Megillah. Fortunately, the Bills only have to play him once every 4 years.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing with Tyrod, okay? The guy is easy to root for, does everything to the letter, great leader, great teammate, great character person that you would want at the quarterback position if you're a head coach. But the results on the field just aren't consistent enough. And we can slice this any different way you want to. I've watched every game he's played in a Buffalo uniform the last 3 years in person. It's been under three different offensive coordinators in three seasons. I'm kind of counting Anthony Lynn as last year. And we've seen a lot of the same things. So people can talk about changing the coordinator all they want. People can talk about weapons all they want. The weapons have changed over the course of the year. You've had deep threats in Sammy Watkins and Marquise Goodwin. You've had competent possession receivers in Robert Woods, Jordan Matthews. Granted, he wasn't on the field a lot. Charles Clay has been a tight end weapon here throughout that duration. You've got a giant target with a wide catch radius in Kelvin Benjamin. Granted, they were only on the field for about six games. But you look at his statistics each of these 3 years, they are largely the same.
Right.
Low on interceptions, low on touchdowns, around 60% completion, and a passer rating somewhere in the 90s range. The production hovers around 3,000 yards every year. In an era where the best quarterbacks are throwing for 5,000 yards, the above-average quarterbacks are somewhere between 3,800 and 4,000 yards, you're behind. Your production is behind. 31st in passing, it's not good enough.
Right.
And I don't want to put it all on Tyrod, but after three different offenses, three different coordinators, we haven't seen a dramatic change in his production when you have changed the coordinators. So, you know, I want to believe that Tyrod can do it as much as the next person, but after 3 years, I think it's imperative that the front office has to see if there is a way to upgrade the position.
Hey, Chris, you can stay with us a couple more minutes, I hope.
I should be able to do
okay,
that.
Okay, because I want to get into the locker room today, locker cleanout yep. day, what was said. We'll do that with Chris when we return. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. We're back with more Donald and Me, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tyrod alone in the backfield. Here's the snap. Steps up in the pocket. Tyrod going to keep it himself on the run at the 15. And he is brought down at the 11-yard line. Should be enough for a first down. Miles Jack makes the tackle. It is a Buffalo first down. Tyrod Taylor scrambles again and gets another first down. An 8-yard pickup on 3rd and 7.
Tyrod scrambles into the red zone, the Hunt Real Estate red zone. Visit huntrealestate.com to score on all of your real estate needs. Don't ask me how that turned out. They got to the red zone.
Yeah, right?
The only time.
Just watching that replay on MSG, though. I thought it yesterday, and I'll say it now. Jacksonville headhunts. They go after
yeah.
the heads.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of hits to the head yesterday, which didn't have to be. The Ngakoue play is probably the most egregious. But that one there by Miles Jack when Tyrod ran into the red zone on a scramble, he makes helmet contact.
Yeah.
Of course, once he declares himself as a runner, he doesn't have the benefit of all the quarterback protections in which a helmet-to-helmet hit would draw an immediate flag. And they take advantage of that, those Jacksonville players.
Yes.
Lot of helmet hits. And I think it's done to intimidate on purpose.
I was just about to say that. You have a bunch of young guys on that team that don't care. They want to impose their will. They want to intimidate you. They want to hit you hard.
And they talk a lot of trash, too.
They talk a lot of trash. Not just Jalen Ramsey. I mean, all of those guys were talking trash yep. yesterday. That is the personality of that team, you know. And so you'll see it again this week when they play Pittsburgh. I mean,
yeah,
that's how they're
I'm
going
interested
to play.
To watch now because I'm telling you right now, Pittsburgh in their own building, they're not going to take to that kindly. And there's going to be a fight if they do enough of that. There will be a fight.
Pittsburgh's going to wipe the floor with them.
Well,
come on. Bortles playing the way he is.
I don't know if they'll wipe the floor. I think the defense will keep him in it. I think their defense will keep him in it. And then I see Pittsburgh kind of pulling away at the end. That's kind of what I envision. But if there's a couple of helmet hits like that on Antonio Brown or someone, someone's coming off the bench and laying that person out. It's not going to be tolerated.
Chris Brown is in studio with us predicting all-out war in the divisional round playoff
game. A little WWE out there, Pittsburgh.
We're talking about yesterday's game at length today, but today is also locker cleanout day, Chris, and most of the attention focused on Kyle Williams, the Bills veteran defensive tackle, all the speculation about his future. And I know you were there. When let's let folks hear what Kyle had to say when he was asked today how he reflects on the 2017 Bills season.
You know, I'm grateful, but I'm probably going to need a little more time. You know, I'm still disappointed from yesterday and wish it could have gone a different way and felt like it, you know, it was right there. So to come up short is still tough. But, you know, like I said yesterday, I'm grateful for the guys in this locker room and the year that we had and an opportunity to work with them and play with them.
Is this year a little more enjoyable than maybe some others for you?
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, you get more more accomplishment, you know, you're more fulfilled. You know, you get opportunity to go to the playoffs and play, you know, even when it ends roughly, and you know, you just figure out how to get better from there.
When do you think the standard been set? Coaching your mind, has the standard been set?
Yeah, you know, with this team, but you know that, you know, as we all know, teams are always changing. You know, you'll add new guys, and it'll be something that you know he'll have building blocks, but he'll just have to continue to build, you know, as the pieces that you add.
How long, like what type of time frame on deciding on your future and kind of what's your mindset?
I don't have one. We'll, you know, we'll meet with the people that need to be met with and discuss it, and we'll see where we go.
How much gas do you feel like you have left in the tank?
I think I got enough to get there.
Hey, Kyle. When you can appreciate how hard it is now to get to the playoffs. Have you taken any time at all to think about some of these young guys that are coming in now? Like, they just have no idea what's ahead. It seems like this team's going in the right direction. Do you see the same things that I'm seeing? And what can you tell them about? It's not easy.
No, and I think they realize it's not easy. Even the young guys, you know, whether you're talking about rookies or second-year guys that are here this year that have an opportunity to accomplish that and get to the playoffs, you see how the season can ebb and flow. You know, we would go through a hot start. You know, we hit the bottom. You know, we work our way out of it. You know, that's what the, you know, the NFL season looks like. Now, obviously, you want to minimize your bottom. You know, maybe that's only one game in there, maybe two at the worst. But I think guys got a pretty good view of what this league is about and what this having success in this league takes.
Appreciating the fact that you haven't made up your mind or haven't stated it publicly, is one of the things that you're weighing the opportunity to go out at least on a high note in the sense that you finally were part of a team that made the playoffs?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, none of us really ever get to choose when we may or may not be done. You know, I love to play the game, and I love being a part of this football team. And like I've said before, you know, it's hard for me to go down that road because, you know, I haven't really sat back and thought about it. So, like I said, we'll figure it all out as we move forward.
Kyle Williams, Bills defensive tackle, no timetable on his decision whether to come back for another year. I thought, you know, I was there yesterday when you talk about it too, Chris. I mean, it's not wholly in his hands, you know. There's other considerations, contract, I think, being paramount.
Yeah.
And I will say this, too. If he doesn't come back, add it to the list. Another hole that has to be plugged. You know, he played pretty well this year.
Last year was tough for him to walk away. He had to figure it out. This year it's even harder. You actually made the playoffs. And you actually believe – and have somewhat the same mentality as Coach McDermott. So you feel like, man, we did something here. We can actually do this again, you know, if you guys in the front office make the right move. So it makes it a lot harder. We know Kyle Williams loves to play the game. Ultimately, he still has to go back, talk to his family, talk to the organization. I'm sure Coach McDermott is going to be as upfront as he can with Kyle Williams in terms of where they want to go with certain positions, certain moves, at least upfront as he can be. But it's not something that he can make a day after losing the game. Right. He needs time to make that decision.
Chris?
We'll have further analysis on this on BuffaloBills.com. We'll be breaking it all down probably in the next half hour or so. It'll be up on the site. But what is clear, what was answered today, was Kyle Williams firmly believes he can still play this game.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of whether he can still produce for the team. It's a matter of whether he wants to go through the daily grind. Right. He does love the game. He's going to be 35 in June.
Yeah. He has kids.
He can still play. He's got five kids, you know, and a supportive family. I mean, his wife is fantastic, and, you know, she's great with Kyle and the kid. I mean, Murph and I see him after every game. The kids are doing wrestling matches in the end zone on the field while we're trying to do our stand-ups
she's wrestling
for the website, and she's right
she's
there.
Wrangling.
Yeah, she's right there wrangling them. She doesn't have a lasso, but, you know, those kids are tough, man. They beat
they
on
are.
Each other. But anyway, I'm getting off the topic here. The point here is what's different this year in comparison to last year is, number one, he's not under contract. Number two, the team made the playoffs, as Donald pointed out. How does that all change and weigh into his thinking? Lorenzo, I asked him, another veteran. You know, he said, yeah, when you get there, you're kind of thinking, oh, let's see if we can go another step, the next year. And that is the lure, you know, on the end of the fishing line for Kyle Williams. What also here has to be discussed is, what is Kyle Williams' value? I don't think there's any debate about what his value is in the locker room as a leader, a motivator, a guy to pull other people along with the rest of the team. And I think if you asked Coach McDermott who represents the best help for him in the locker room, Kyle Williams would be at the top of the list. It's not even close.
Right.
But what is his value on the field, and what is his value in terms of dollars and cents? That is something that's going to have to be agreed upon by both Kyle Williams and Buffalo's front office. And as we all know, sometimes business can get a little hairy, especially when you have a team with as many holes to plug as the Bills.
Right.
We just ran down some of it in the last segment. We're talking about whether Kyle comes back or not, you need another defensive tackle.
Right.
You could make the argument you need three linebackers for this team. UJ Gaines is a free agent. Leonard Johnson is a free agent. That's your starting nickel and your starting corner. You could have two potential holes you've got to fill there. Is Colt Anderson coming back to serve as a special teamer and as a backup safety? I don't know. Maybe you need depth at the safety position behind Poyer and Hyde. Mm-hmm. I mean, these right there, we've got a half a dozen players, and Kyle Williams isn't even retired yet.
You haven't even talked about offense yet either.
No, I haven't even touched offense.
Yeah. Not at all.
And we're talking about some high-priced positions there, too. If you want a true number one receiver in free agency, you're paying $8, $9 million a year. If you want a quarterback.
Cool. True number one, like a, it went up from
if you want
nine,
a quarterback like 12. Kirk Cousins or, heck, even an Alex Smith, you're talking upwards of $18 to $25 million a year. So there are ramifications here that affect what I think for fans is an easy decision. Of course you want Kyle Williams back. Got to have him back.
Right.
And from a leadership perspective, you absolutely want him back. Do you want him back at $7 million? Do you want him back at $6 million?
For 1 year.
This is where it gets hairy, because once you get into the business of football, then you are no longer talking about what your wants are. You're talking about what's realistic in the budgeting of your football team for 2018.
Today, locker clean-out day, we were talking earlier, it's also exit interview. So his exit interview is going to go something like, he's going to step in the office, Coach McDermott, Brandon Bean, he's probably going to meet with both of those guys because he's a free agent, because he's not under contract. He's going to meet with both of them. They're going to say, listen, we love what you do on the field. We love what you do in the locker room. We would love to have you around here. You should probably step away, take some time to figure out what it is that you want to do. I mean, ultimately, we have to do the same thing. And Kyle understands that. He's been in this league so long, he understands the business of this thing. Both sides need to step away and evaluate the entire team before they can decide if they want to have him and if he wants to even come back and play football anymore.
Yep. Speaking of Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, we expect we'll have them on the air with us in studio as the week moves along. Not quite sure which day yet, but they will be with us later on this week. We're going to break. We're coming back with more. A couple of more minutes with Chris Brown when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. The day after the Bills season ends. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Hey, we mentioned it earlier, but the entire free agent list is pretty extensive for the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, Kyle Williams' name at the top of that list. Preston Brown is on that list. Chris Brown, who we just had on the show last hour, he would be a guy who obviously is going to factor into any decisions they make. Also on defense, there are several others. Leonard Johnson on defense is a significant free agent coming up for the Bills. E.J. Gaines is a free agent. So there's no shortage of guys that they're going to have to at least pay attention to here.
Chris, I know you're going to weigh in on this one here, but you start off with Kyle and Preston. You're talking about Coach McDermott, a defensive coach, a guy who, number one, wants to be able to get pressure with his front, with just the line. And they weren't able to consistently do that this year. And then you have your linebacker who leads the league in tackles. I mean, those are big decisions that have to be made here. You have your starting corners out there. I mean, there's so much on the defensive side without even talking about the offensive side of the ball. It's going to be some big time decisions for Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean.
Yeah, I will say this. I think on the offensive side, Travaris Cadet is a player that I think you could get back in the fold for a relatively affordable price, especially since he's coming off the fractured ankle. And I think his skill set caters very well as long as this offensive scheme remains the same. And I think his skill set is close enough to that of McCoy where you can plug him in and you don't have to change your play calling all that much. And I think he can be a dynamic weapon on third down and take some of the load off McCoy, at least in that part of the offense. And I think he's an affordable guy. I think he liked the situation he found himself in here in the latter stages of the season. And I think the coaching staff liked what he brought to the table as well. So I think that's a relatively easy guy to get back in the fold. I think Preston Brown is going to be a very interesting litmus test for this front office, and this is why. Is he productive? Unquestionably. Is he a responsible player, a character guy? Yes and yes. Does he fit the exact template of what this coaching staff wants in their linebackers in this scheme? I'm not 100% sure.
Right.
The reason why is because this is a defensive scheme that is built on speed at the linebacker position. And Preston Brown isn't slow, but he's also not Luke Kuechly.
Right.
And not a lot of guys are, in fairness to Preston. I openly wonder if they determine Preston Brown is a guy they want for another four seasons. And if not, do they look to see if they can fill that hole in a way that better fits the type of player they want there? And I'm talking skill set here. I'm not talking about football smarts. I'm not talking about character. And I'm not talking about being responsible on the field. He can do all those things. He's proven that to this coaching staff, and they've said as much. But to take the next step as a defense, I wonder if they're going to look for someone who's more athletic, can do more in coverage, and can make more plays behind the line of scrimmage. Because while Preston Brown makes tons of tackles, tons of plays, I think a lot of them are 2, 3, and 4 yards up the field. And that has a place in this game. It certainly does. And don't get me wrong, Preston Brown's one of my favorite players on this roster. I'm saying from the front office perspective, I wonder if they're going to look for a more athletic answer at that position than trying to re-sign Preston Brown for the long term.
Hey, Chris, we're less than 24 hours since the Bills season ended, but in the interest of instant history, how do you think you will remember the 2017 Bills season? What will you remember it for?
What will I remember it for?
Broke the drought, ended the drought.
Yeah, I think that the three things that stand out for me are, one, ending the playoff drought. I mean, that's what this year is going to ultimately be remembered for by everybody, because it's easy to remember just because it was such a landmark thing. That's number one. Number two would be the way this secondary came together. Five new pieces, if you count nickel corner Leonard Johnson. They were the defense. They were the reason the defense was as successful as they were, with all of their takeaways, the way they locked down opponents' passing games for the most part through the course of the season, and just the way they bonded so quickly and played off each other so effectively. I mean, they're getting bouquets blown at them from Bill Belichick here in the latter stages of the season because of their unique ability to disguise coverages, confuse quarterbacks. That is number two for me. And then number three, I think, is what LeSean McCoy was able to do with a passing game that got worse, not better, with an offensive line that had to switch schemes on the fly. You look at LeSean McCoy's numbers at the end of the season, and they're largely the same from a production standpoint, and he did even more in the passing game this year. So those are probably the top three things that stand out for me from a player perspective. I think from a coaching perspective, though, you've got to put coach there in probably in that top three also, because I was strictly thinking players.
Right.
I would probably put what coach was able to accomplish with this team from a mental toughness standpoint, from a setting the standard standpoint. The bottom line is this. The Pegulas have the right man in the front office in Brandon Bean. They've got the right man at the head coaching post in Sean McDermott. Just let it grow. Now you just sit back and watch it grow, because those two guys, I think, are the right people in place for the first time in a long time to move this team forward. So it's not just a once-in-a-while playoff team. It's a more-often-than-not playoff team, and I think they will get this team there.
All right, good stuff. You can catch Chris, of course, on our website, buffalobills.com. Plenty of more recaps of the season coming up over the days and weeks ahead. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate it.
You got it.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, buffalobills.com. When we return, we're going to refocus back on yesterday's game, all that went down yesterday, including the rough spots for the Buffalo Bills. Jay Feely's going to join us, former NFL kicker. He was on the sidelines, part of the NFL on CBS crew in yesterday's Bills-Jacksonville wildcard playoff game. Jay Feely going to be live with us on the line when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Locker cleanout day for the Buffalo Bills today. One day after their wildcard playoff loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Bills players here cleaning out their lockers after losing to Jacksonville and ending their season. with the loss. Just 3 points on the scoreboard for the Buffalo Bills. Much of the discussion today dealing with Buffalo's offensive futility. They have several moves to consider as we move into the offseason. Players cleaning out their lockers, exit interviews with the head coach and football department going on today. We expect to hear from Brandon Bean, the GM, and head coach Sean McDermott in the days ahead, and we'll get him live on the show moving forward. So the division round is set now in the NFL playoffs. It starts Saturday afternoon, 4:35. The Atlanta Falcons and the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC, followed by the Tennessee Titans at New England in Foxborough against the Patriots on Saturday night. Sunday, 1:05 kickoff, the Jacksonville Jaguars playing the Steelers in Pittsburgh, followed by the Saints and the Vikings at 4:40 p.m. Tennessee coach Mike Mularkey says Derrick Henry is expected to be his starting running back against the New England Patriots. He's not ruling out veteran DeMarco Murray, but even if Murray finds a way to play, Mularkey says it'll be in a limited role. Carolina Panthers facing questions about the way Cam Newton stayed in the game, a quick return in the game anyway yesterday when he appeared to have a concussion issue. NFL officials have been in contact with the Panthers' medical staff as to why Newton was not taken to the locker room when he was evaluated for a concussion. Meantime, the Carolina Panthers season ends and 37-year-old pass rusher Julius Peppers' career may be ending. He says he has not decided yet on his playing future. Bills, vice president of player personnel, Brian Gain, is considered the favorite now for the general manager's job in Houston. That's where he came from when he joined the Bills this past spring. The Patriots rejected Houston's request to interview Patriots player personnel director Nick Caserio. And the Buffalo Sabres host Winnipeg tomorrow night. College football national championship game coming up tonight at 8 o'clock, Georgia and Alabama. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. On a windy day, I just poked my head outdoors, Donald. The wind is howling out there. Do you see it out there? It's nasty.
I can hear it. I can hear it against this this studio that keeps us safe in here and warm sometimes.
Yeah, warm would be debatable, especially out in the control room. I think they're okay today. We're going to hear from Jay Feely, kicker, longtime kicker in the NFL. He was on the sidelines yesterday, part of the NFL on CBS broadcast crew. But right now I want to hear from that Buffalo locker room after the game. We spent some time doing interviews and listening to what players had to say. Time for Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. Head coach Sean McDermott, proud of his team's effort.
Guys played extremely hard, and you know, you don't get anything for the effort in this game. It's one loss on the scoreboard. Obviously, we need to score more points. Appreciate the fans making the trip like they did down here to support us. Heck of a year. Appreciate how hard the guys played, how hard they worked all season. And, you know, this was a step. We learned a lot of valuable lessons today, ones that we'll carry forward as we move forward as an organization.
Linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, the Bills failed to get any takeaways.
The biggest thing for us is we didn't take the ball away today. That's what we've kind of, you know, rested on the whole entire season, able to take the ball away. We had a couple opportunities today and wasn't able to capitalize. So for us defensively, that's where I think we fell short at. We can't do that on the road in the playoffs if you want to win and be able to take it to the next level.
Safety Jordan Poyer, the Buffalo defense was good but not great.
It's a couple plays, you know, that we left out there. You know, we felt like the team shouldn't have had more than seven, really 6 points on us. You know, I thought the ball had that they scored on. I thought he bobbled it. I thought they'd at least review it maybe. But it's football. You know, got to move on. But definitely very tough.
Defensive tackle Kyle Williams. The Bills worked on stuffing the run.
The number one rushing team in the league, and it was something that really focused on. And it did a good job. And like I said, the things that hurt us was the quarterback getting out and running really on passing play. So, you know, disappointed there. Wish we could have done a better job, and, you know, I think it would have made a difference.
Running back LeSean McCoy on the sequence near the goal line, to run or to pass.
I don't really fight that battle if we should have ran or we shouldn't have, because if we catch the ball and we score, everybody's happy. You know, and if I run it and I don't get it, you second guess it. If I run it, you do score, everybody's excited. So, you know, we need to score there, no matter what it is. If I was running it or throwing it, whatever it was, we practiced the same reps, same situations, you know, the whole week. And that's the part of the game where we hurt us the most.
Wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin, the Bills put up just 3 points.
I mean, definitely, that's terrible. I mean, as an offense, you know, offenses do what? Put up points. So we definitely got to put up 1 point and 3 points if we, you know, want to advance in the playoffs. I mean, the only thing we can do now is go back, correct the mistakes, man, and get ready to come back next year.
There you go, around the locker room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. What they were saying in the Buffalo locker room. During the course of the game, you heard, if you watched the CBS telecast, you heard from our next guest. He spent 14 seasons in the league as a place kicker. He's now part of the number one team of the NFL on CBS. On the sidelines yesterday for the Bills-Jacksonville wildcard playoff game. Happy to have Jay Feely on the line with us. Jay, thanks for joining us. John Murphy and Donald Jones here. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. It's good to talk to you guys again.
Are you back in Arizona, or are you still in Florida right now?
I am in Arizona, sitting here out in 70-degree weather, enjoying winter out here.
Jay, yeah. Come on. This is the second time we've had you, I think, this month, and that's the second time you talked about the weather in Arizona.
You have to, because in the summer, everybody kills you for how hot it is.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the weather in Florida was no bargain. I said to somebody yesterday, there's no point being in Florida if it's going to be 45 degrees and cloudy like it was yesterday, right?
Right, I'm with you there. You think you got a home run, you're going to go down to Florida, get a nice little divisional playoff game, and no, sir. Wild card game, no, sir.
Wasn't to be. Hey, I'm interested in the reason why we got you on. You were there. You're calling the game with Jim Nance and Tony Romo and Tracy Wolfson on the sideline as well. Let's be honest. That was not a real compelling television broadcast because of the way the game played out. Just one touchdown the whole game. I'd imagine all of you guys were disappointed in the way that game played out yesterday.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I think it was solid defensive football on both sides of the ball and not very good offense on either side. And there's elements that are compelling in that. I mean, that's part of what football is. It doesn't always have to be high scoring, although, you know, that's what fans want to see. That's a lot more exciting. So obviously that's what you know, you want to see as a network. But I think you can appreciate the excellence when you look at both sides of the ball defensively and what each team did and how they were able to shut down the opposing team. And when you do it in the playoffs, you deserve a lot of credit for that, regardless of who the opponent is.
Now, I talked to someone earlier in the week, and I actually said, Jay, this game is going to remind you of like an old school high school football game. Run, run, run.
That's right.
Some play action pass. Did it remind you of that yesterday?
It did. I did about seven Army games this year and a couple of Army Air Force games when I think there was four passes total in that game. You know, so that's what it reminded you of a little bit. You know, I mean, these teams are content to run the ball, play solid defense, try to play really well on special teams and win a close game. And, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, if you're the Buffalo Bills and before the season began, you said, hey, we're going to make the playoffs. We're going to break the streak. We're going to have an opportunity on the last drive to tie the game. That's a successful year. And not even taking into account anything that you did to build up draft capital and to plan for the future. Just that alone, making the playoffs, breaking the streak, having an opportunity in that game at the end of the game, that's a successful year for that team. And I think the whole organization and Sean McDermott in particular deserve a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree with that, Jay, here in Buffalo. But I think what makes it very painful for Bills fans was that game yesterday was winnable. It was right there to be won,
sure.
And the Bills couldn't do anything about it offensively.
I agree, but if you say who was the better team, I think if you're objective, you would say Jacksonville is the better team. They're a little better defensively. They have more depth on that defensive line, and they were able to make some plays. You know, the running back position is probably equal. You know, the offensive line is probably equal. And you guys have a better tight end. So I think there's arguments to be made, but I think all in all, it's a good year. The only thing, if I look back on the Bills season, you know, the opportunity to draft Patrick Mahomes and to pass him up, I think that's something that is going to kind of stick in your craw for a while, because I did him against Kansas City. I did him in the play in the preseason as well. I did him against Denver, the Denver-Kansas City game the last week of the season and then the preseason, and I think he's going to be special. And even though you got a tremendous player in Tre'Davious White and you got another first-round pick, you have to figure out that quarterback position going forward, and I think that's a guy you look back on and you say, man, we had an opportunity to draft him and we didn't do it.
Jay, you know what really makes it – obviously you lost the game yesterday 10-3, so the game is winnable. But going into the game, if you would have said, man – we lost the game because Blake Bortles scrambled for more yards than he actually threw, and then he had a touchdown pass at the end of the game. You couldn't have paid me to believe that.
No, defensively, you did everything you could have asked for. You really did. I mean, you shut him down, and Blake Bortles helped a lot. He missed a lot of open receivers, had trouble with the wind, throwing some of the short, easy completions, and really kept Buffalo in that game. But defensively, you played well enough to win. You just weren't able to make plays offensively, and that's an area they got to go back, look in the offseason, figure out the direction of the quarterback, get a number one receiver because you don't have that right now, you know, and continue to build on that offense.
Jay Feely is our guest from the NFL on CBS. He was on the sidelines on the CBS broadcast yesterday, the Bills wild card playoff loss. Jay, a lot of people here are locking in on that late second quarter sequence when the Bills had the ball deep in Jacksonville territory. They actually had a first and goal at the one. Do you have any thoughts on that sequence, the plays that were called, the execution that failed down there? What did you think of all that?
Well, I think, you know, Tony obviously and Jim talked about it on the broadcast, the fact that you have the ball at the one-yard line. You want to try to pound it in. You're a running team. You average almost 2 yards more per carry to the left side of your line, so that's where you figure you're going with the ball, you know, and that's what you do. You know, if it's third down, I can understand that call, you know, but when it's first down and it's first and goal to one and really there's negative things that can happen. You can go back to that play later, but, you know, I would go with my strength, who I am, what got me to that position, what got me into the playoffs, and that's running the ball.
Jay, it's the crazy thing was, you know, it was reported, but LeSean McCoy said it was a run-pass option there. So ultimately, I mean, you have the option. It gives the quarterback the option to make the decision on what was best. Would you have just left that out and just said, look, you just run the ball. We'll worry about passing it on second and third down.
Yeah, I think, you know, it shows trust, obviously, in Tyrod Taylor. And Rick Dennison has grown in his trust. We had a couple of meetings with him throughout the year, and it was interesting to see how he did grow in his trust and what he wanted Tyrod to do in executing that offense. And, you know, that shows trust, but at the same time, you have to sometimes take it out of your players' hands and just say, this is what we're going to do because this is what the situation dictates. And we don't want the possibility of a negative outcome, a penalty there, a holding penalty, the offensive pass interference, or, you know, an interception. You know, you want to just take it out of their hands and say, we're going to do what we do, and that's run the ball and trust that Shady will get it in the end zone.
That offensive pass interference, too, made it compounded the problem. A problem, you know, to try to throw it on first and goal at the 1.5-yard line, but to have to back up then 10 yards, I thought made a bad situation even worse at that point, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, absolutely, because now you're in a – you're behind the sticks, and you're playing to their strengths, not your strengths. And the ability to line up and run the ball really didn't exist because of where you were, you know. And now you're allowing that defensive line to get pressure and to come after you. So it just handicapped you tremendously on that drive.
Hey Jay, what are some of the things? And you talked about, you know, I guess things that fans should be proud of, or this organization should be proud of from this year, and optimistic for the future. What were some of the things, maybe as a team or even individual players, that really impressed you about this Bills team from yesterday's game?
I think number one, they stuck together. You know, I think it's a very close team, a team that likes each other, that got to know each other. I think Sean McDermott did an excellent job of keeping that team together. And when he decided to bench Tyrod Taylor and to put Peterman in the game, and that didn't work, it had the potential to fall apart. It didn't happen. You know, I think he was very upfront with the team about, this is why I did it. This is why we're making the change, because it didn't work. And because of his willingness to be vulnerable with his team and with his players, you know, players make mistakes too. They understand it. It's when a coach presents himself as infallible, that he doesn't make those mistakes. That's when players kind of turn their backs. And they were able to hold it together and continue to press forward. And they picked up draft capital. You know, you look at next year, they got 2 first rounds, 2 second rounds. They got picks throughout. They can make a move if they want to try to get up to take one of the quarterbacks or wait if they think one of them will drop. And it's a quarterback-heavy draft. And I think that's the big question. You know, what are their plans for Tyrod Taylor? And what are they going to do? How much do they believe in Peterman? And what are they going to do with him? You know, and you have to figure out that question. But look around in the division. You know, you look at the Jets, you look at Miami, and even New England, because Tom Brady's not going to be there forever. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know he said he's going to play 5 more years, but I don't buy it.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you can answer that question and you can figure out who your quarterback is for the future, and then now you can facilitate all those other positions. Getting a great corner and Tre'Davious White and getting Gaines and having those guys, they built something special there defensively, and they continue to supplement that and then figure out those questions on offense, and you got a great solid foundation to build on.
Hey, Jay, on the other side, what do you think the immediate future holds for the Jacksonville Jaguars? In other words, what are their chances at Pittsburgh this coming weekend?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got to play better offensively. They did go up there and put it on Pittsburgh, you know, and beat them pretty handily. And, you know, that gives them a lot of confidence. But you have a team that can score points in a hurry. And if you get behind and you're Jacksonville and you don't have the luxury of running the ball, they have to play it close. They have to play excellent on special teams. I would expect Joe DeCamillis to be aggressive on special teams. You know, he threw three fake punts this year. You know, there's a couple things that I was watching for in that game that he didn't do. And he has a history of, you know, reverses and throwbacks and that kind of stuff. And, you know, taking advantage, trying to steal possession on special teams. And they're a very good special teams unit. Playing solid, you can't turn the ball over offensively. And then you got to find a way. I think they can shut down Pittsburgh like they did earlier. They have the ability and the corners to be able to cover those receivers and shut them down. And then the defensive line pressure to be able to shut down the run game without having to blitz. So it's a good matchup for them defensively. They're one of the best teams to match up with the Steelers, but you have to be able to score points when you play that team.
I mean, Jay, the defense is impressive. I'm not going to lie. That defense is one of the better defenses, and obviously in the league this year. But
no question.
In the past couple of years, I mean, they have talent on all three levels of that defense. But ultimately, how far can they go with the way Blake Bortles looked yesterday with that guy playing quarterback? How far can just that defense take you?
Well, I think back to the Baltimore Ravens, you know, and when they went all the way and won a Super Bowl and they let their defense carry them. You know, and they made plays on special teams. You know, they had a kicker in Matt Stover who was excellent, who won games. There was a stretch there. You remember the Ravens, they didn't score a touchdown for five straight weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I think they won four of those games, you know. So it's a league where if your defense plays excellent and you shut teams down, you can win, but you can't turn the ball over. And you have to be able to complete passes when they're there. When you have open men and you have check down receivers that you're able to complete a pass to and move the chains, you have to be able to do that. And that was something that Blake Bortles, he struggled with that. You know, there were open receivers that he didn't hit. And in the end, he decided, you know what, I'm going to tuck it and I'm going to run for the first downs. And he was able to move the chains that way. And that's really why they won the game.
Hey Jay, you and your CBS crew, do you have that game in Pittsburgh Sunday, Foxborough the night before? Are you doing both? What's the plan for you?
We are in New England. We got New England, Tennessee, and Dan Fouts will be up there in Pittsburgh doing that game. And so we get Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. We've been up there a lot, it seems like, in the playoffs.
Yeah, the playoffs live there, that's for sure. Hey, Jay, thanks for this. We appreciate you making a few minutes for us today. Thank you very much. We'll be watching now, watching from the couch now that the Bills are out of the playoffs. So do a good job.
Right,
we know
guys.
You will. Thanks.
Take care. Congratulations to the Bills and the Bills Mafia and all those fans. That was a fun year.
It was
watching
fun.
You guys, hopefully keep building on it.
Thanks. Jay Feely, the NFL on CBS commentator on the sidelines for yesterday's game. He'll be doing that up in Foxborough, as he said. Jay joined us on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Good perspective coming from outside, you know, in the wreckage of yesterday's loss to hear Feely talk about, you know, how it was a pretty positive season for the Bills. I know Bills fans know that, but it's good to hear it from outside, I think, the organization.
Yeah, it is good. I think everybody nationally feels that way, though. You know, I just was on Twitter and seeing something from, it might have been Sports Illustrated, Pro Football Talk. I don't, one of those that was talking about the Bills on the uptick. I think everybody sees what Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean have done this year and how they've been able to, obviously, number one, get the team into the playoffs. How they've been able to, they've had injuries and brought guys in off the streets, and these guys will come in and have a big game or something like that to help the team win a game. How they've been able to get those draft picks, you know, to get a couple of draft, well, to get five draft picks in the first three rounds right now. That is a huge thing, to have so many draft picks throughout the draft. That's a big thing for this team. So I think everybody can see nationally and here locally, everybody's optimistic about where the Bills are going. And then obviously you have out there, when you look in New England this week, you're going to see Tom Brady, but you know he's not going to be able to play that much longer. And so there's a lot of reason for optimism here in Western New York. They just have to continue to build on it, continue to get those players in the door, and now just build on the success that you had this year.
I want to get your thoughts on yesterday's game. We got plenty of time to talk about this year's success and what lies ahead, but on yesterday's game, what's your major takeaway? What do you take away, the biggest thing you take away from that Buffalo loss yesterday? Your biggest takeaway from Sunday's Bills loss in Jacksonville. That's our Twitter poll. You can ring us up and let us know what you think at 803-0550. 83% say the struggle of the passing game was your biggest takeaway. 13% say the problems in the red zone. 3% say something else. 1% say lack of defensive takeaways. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Jack calling from Rochester. Go ahead, Jack. You're on the air.
You know, with all the talk about quarterback that's going to go on in the offseason, a lot of people are going to bring up Nate Peterman's name, of course. And one thing that concerned me a little bit was the final interception that entered the game. And it seemed like the type of an out pattern where the announcers always talk about arm strength being a key. And I'd like your opinion on whether you thought the cause of that interception, was it a weak throw, or what was the issue on the final interception?
Yeah, I don't think it was a particularly strong arm throw.
That's exactly what it was.
And I think also, Nathan Peterman stared it down maybe just a shade too long. It's an outstanding corner over there, by the way, in Jalen Ramsey.
All three of those reasons. That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, you didn't have the strongest throw. It was kind of floated out there. And Jalen Ramsey is good. And if you do that against Jalen Ramsey, he's a Pro Bowler for a reason. You know, that dude can make plays. I think he is going to be regarded as – if not this year, next year, in the future, the best corner in the league. I think he is that talented, and he made the play yesterday on the ball.
Here is Rich calling from Snyder, New York. Hello, Rich. Welcome. You're on the air.
How you doing? I just had a little comment about the way Tyrod got mobbed yesterday. Hmm. Passing game would have been a little bit better if he wasn't mobbed. He got the late hit low below his knees, no penalty. He already threw the ball. The ball was out of his hands. The one guy that knocked him out of the game – hit him in a headlock and bounce his head off the ground. No penalty. I don't get it. Isn't helmet to helmet illegal?
That wasn't helmet to helmet.
There were helmet to helmet hits.
Right.
But that wasn't one of them.
There were some helmet to helmet hits. That one wasn't. That was a tackle.
When that guy put him in a headlock and
hit
his head into the ground, another guy.
I'm sorry. We accidentally lost him. That hit was vicious and it obviously knocked him out of the game, but. I think it's legal, Donald, as vicious as it was.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was a tackle. I mean, that's just what it was. It wasn't like a horse collar or any of that. He grabbed him and he took him to the ground. It was just unfortunate that his head hit the ground. But there were some helmet-to-helmet hits. There was that hit below the knees there that I actually tweeted out, and you can go back and look at the history of my Twitter.
That's okay.
And see what I tweeted out about that one. I don't know if someone was pushed into him.
I don't think so.
But it's like, okay, if there was, that was another quarterback, that would have been flags.
It probably would have been.
You know, so yesterday there were some dirty hits out there. It was some physical play, but there were some dirty plays out there that didn't get called.
Yeah. Here's a call from Dan in Jamestown, New York. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, John.
Great. Hi. How you doing, Dan? Sure.
I'm just wondering about they're talking about our quarterback and saying, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. But look how many wide receivers they got rid of. I mean, you can't bring people in halfway through the season and expect to be, like a John Stallworth or anything like that. I mean, they got rid of – how many did they get rid of? They got rid of Watkins, Hogan, Wood.
And Hogan was a year ago, but
– I don't know how good he's doing out there.
The Bills have lost some talent at receiver. They picked, it was all part of the culture change, all part of, setting a new standard here. They got players in return, including E.J. Gaines, right, for Sammy. Mm-hmm. E.J. Gaines came for Sammy. And, they went out and used the draft pick to get Kelvin Benjamin. But there's no question you're right about that, Dan. They, they didn't make it easy on Tyrod Taylor, which is not to say that Tyrod made it easy on himself, but there was a constantly rotating cast of characters there at wide receiver, and I think among the many things we've learned about Tyrod Taylor and his 3-year tenure as starter is that he needs to get to a comfort level with his receivers. Anybody would, but he seems to need maybe a little bit more time.
He needs it. He needs that time with those guys, but I think ultimately – that's going to be a part of the evaluation when they go back and they evaluate Tyrod Taylor and what he was able to do this year. Ultimately, they're going to say, we got to get better. So what was it? Was it quarterback? Was it receiver? Is it play calling? What do we need to do better? And that's a decision that we're going to have to wait and see. And best believe, we're not going to find that out until they actually have to make that decision on Tyrod Taylor. The last day, that's when we're going to find out if they're going to pick up that option or not. And they're in a tough position right now because – and Brownie and I were talking about this. They don't know. They have to make that decision before free agency actually opens up. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what quarterbacks would be free agents. You don't know what's going to happen in the draft. I mean, there's so much, and they got to make that decision on Tyrod Taylor. So there's a lot in play right now, money-wise, obviously, with Tyrod, with a bunch of other guys on the roster, the draft, free agency, and we got to wait and see.
We are dissecting yesterday's Buffalo Bills loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars on the show today. Going to hear more from the locker room today, too, locker cleanout day, so come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by NEPA Auto Parts, coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio. We're here all week, ladies and gentlemen. Lots of time to talk about what lies ahead for the Bills. And as I said earlier, we expect to get Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott live with us on the show a little bit later on this week. They're going to meet with the media and hopefully walk down the hall, pay a visit to us here at the front end of the AdPro Sports Training Center. That'll be good. I look forward. You know, I don't look forward to the offseason because it's long and we're disappointed today, but there is a routine to this, and part of that routine is getting ready for free agency, getting ready for the draft, combine. I mean, the routine I like. I do.
That's
like
what first of all, I love college football, so I like to watch these young players get this opportunity to change their lives. I think you have to be optimistic about the players that they're bringing in this building. And they have a lot of draft capital. I believe that they're going to make a lot of moves, and it's tough to see certain guys not get signed back or certain guys get released or things like that, but that's the business of the NFL. Ultimately, I'm excited to see what talent they bring in here for next year. I'm excited to see, obviously, the decision with the quarterback and all of that stuff, but I just want to see how much talent they can actually bring in here. I want to see how good these guys – they had some draft picks this year that played well for them. Deion – you had Tre'Davious.
Draft class.
Yes, really? A very good draft class this year. I'm excited to see about this one coming up, you know, because you have so much.
More picks.
Yeah, you have so many picks. So, I mean, you have an opportunity to truly change your team with this draft. And so let's see what they're able to do with that.
A great 2017 class, though, right?
Yeah.
Tre'Davious White. I came across this Pro Football Focus, end of regular season grades. Tre'Davious White, third-ranked corner in the NFL on their grade system. Not rookie corner.
Right.
Third-ranked corner in the NFL.
Right.
He had a sensational season. And you can go right down the line. Deion Dawkins, Zay Jones, disappointment. Mm-hmm. I'm not ready to call him a bust. No, I'm not ready to call him a bust either.
Nah,
I know the talent's there.
Give him some time.
Yeah.
And hopefully he can turn things around, and we'll see if he's able to do that. But you talk about Deion. You talk about Milano, who came in and made some plays for this team. Tre'Davious, I mean – it was a pretty good draft class and free agency. You know, they brought some guys in here this year. That's why I'm excited about free agency and the draft for this upcoming year.
It's all ahead of us now with the season ending yesterday. We'll take more of your phone calls on yesterday's game in a moment and what you think the big consideration was, your major takeaway. But time now for NFL True or False, presented by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. True, false, Tennessee Titans can continue to win with ugly, gritty performances. I guess it certainly was ugly Saturday night. I guess it was gritty. Can they continue to win? In particular, can they go down to New England and win like that? I say false.
Yeah.
Nope. I think the clock will strike midnight at around 7:30 Saturday night in Foxborough.
Yeah, I'm going to go
or
false.
Or 11 o'clock Saturday night in Foxborough.
I'm going to go false on that one as well. I mean, you can't expect Marcus Mariota completion to Marcus Mariota twice.
He was open.
He was open on that one, and he made the play himself. But you're not going to beat the New England Patriots in Foxborough playing the way they did. You're not going to be down. What were they down? 21-3, and expect to come back on the New England Patriots the way they came back on the Chiefs. So I'm going to go false on that one.
You know, there was talk about Mike Mularkey and his future before the game, and even after the game, there was some talk. And I guess the Titans have clarified it and said he's coming back next year. But I find that stunning. You know, this is a franchise that hasn't done squat really ever. The Tennessee Titans, Houston Oilers before that. I'm a Mike Mularkey fan. I think he did a pretty good job here, as a matter of fact. And I think he's grown as a coach and is better as a coach, and he's got a quarterback he can work with. I was stunned that that was even an issue, whether or not Mularkey would be back. I think they've got a really volatile, unsettled ownership situation,
exactly,
which makes almost everything they do suspect right now.
Right. I have to agree with you. When you don't have stability at the top of the organization – nothing else will be able to fall into place. So once they get all of that stuff situated, I think now that he won a playoff game, they're going to bring him back.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah, they should. And it probably shouldn't have taken this long, but you know, I think they kind of said that now, and the owner is backing them. So we'll see how that plays out moving forward.
NFL True or False Part 2, a revised concussion protocol failed Cam Newton. We talked about it a couple of times during the updates, how the Panthers are being looked at by the NFL for how quickly Newton got back into the game. A new league mandate to require more extensive concussion testing for players who demonstrate obvious symptoms. Newton certainly demonstrated that, right, when he went down. There was talk about, did he get some of the rubber pellets in his eyes? Did he get poked in the eye? I don't know. The way he got up and then went down, it looked to me like he certainly would be at risk for a concussion, the way he got hit in particular. I think the concussion protocol continues to fail players. I think they are not protected.
I don't think they're protected. And, you know, players have to obviously be smart and protect themselves, but you're talking about competitors, the ultimate competitors in the sport of football, these guys who make it to the NFL. Cam Newton wants to help his team win. He knows he's the leader of that team. He wants to be out there. So if you ask him, hey, Cam, do you think – so I'm going to go true on this one. But if you ask him, Cam, do you think that you can go? Yeah, I can go. He can't even remember that he just said, yeah, I can go. But he's going to get out there and play. There have been teams that have done this year. I think this is something they truly need to look into. And no disrespect to the Carolina Panthers training staff, but much respect to the Bills training staff who actually took Micah Hyde back in the locker room and made sure they did the whole thing the right way.
Supposed to work. Right. Yeah. All right, finally, NFL True or False Part 3. Drew Brees is ready for a Super Bowl run. True. True.
Yes.
Absolutely true. Not only are the Saints going to the Super Bowl, they're winning the Super Bowl, Donald. Best team I saw all year. They absolutely smoked the Buffalo Bills here back on November 12th.
Oh, yeah.
And they had almost all the answers they needed yesterday against a pretty game Carolina team. Ted Ginn Jr. with spectacular play. I think Drew Brees and the Saints are going to win the Super Bowl this year. You heard it here.
I like it. I like it. I'm going to go true. I think I have to agree with you here. I think they have the team to win it. I think they have the quarterback who's been there. They have the receivers. They have speed. They have possession. They have big receivers. They have running backs that can run. They have running backs that can catch. They have return game, and they have a defense.
Yep.
And so I don't care who they will face in the playoffs. Unless they just totally have a letdown, I don't expect that to happen.
No.
I think that team is good enough to make it, and I think that team will end up winning it.
You know what they have, too, which is it's tough to admit because I think he comes off as kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going. I
the
think
coach.
Sean Payton, I'm just not a big fan, but he's pretty good. He's a great tactician. You know, he can really dial up an offense, and he'll tell you how great he is if you let him.
I think
they got the whole package there.
I think ultimately they have too many weapons, even for New England to be able to stop. And New England's team, their defense is not as strong. I think they have too many weapons for anybody to stop, and they have a quarterback that will find those weapons, a quarterback that will get those guys the ball. If they can't pass it, they have running backs that can run it, and they have a defense that can stop you. I just think they have too much.
NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. I think we have time to squeeze in a call or two. Joe in Tonawanda. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
How you doing, man?
Good, good, good.
A couple questions about the game. I'll ask a couple questions, make a quick comment, I'll let you. Phil, I'm not sure what this legal catches in the end zone. Do you think the Bills should have, even though they reviewed it, should have questioned that touchdown call? Because they showed on replay 10 times that the ball kind of slipped out of his hands a little before he completed the catch. And on the other question I want to ask, on one of the plays where Tyrod ran, I know he's a runner, but the defender grabbed his helmet and it was kind of like a dirty play. Is that not a penalty anymore, or what's going on there?
Well, let me go the touchdown, first of all, Joe, the only touchdown in the game. Yeah, I didn't see a problem with it, and they do review all plays automatically, all scoring plays. Did the ball move? Yeah, it may have moved a little bit. I think we're at a point now where, you know, people, the cliche is, I don't even know what a catch is anymore. We've been so accustomed to examining each scoring catch in particular, but many catches, you know, frame by frame, pixel by pixel. Did the ball move? Did it shift from one hand to the other? Did he complete the process? That's a catch. I mean, that's a touchdown catch. Come on, right? We know that's a catch.
Don't let Tony Romo hype you up to think it wasn't a catch.
Why? Did he do that on the broadcast?
Tony Romo does it a lot.
Does he?
Yeah, where it's a Jay was talking about this earlier. You know, as soon as there's something, wait, is that a catch?
Yeah, Al Michaels and then in college.
Exactly.
They do that all the time too.
Is that a catch?
Wait a minute, is this going to survive the replay review?
And then you're sitting at home like, wait, is that a catch? You get all excited, and they're like, oh, that is a catch.
It's
man.
One of the worst parts of the modern NFL game. This is what replay has done. Do I need to get back where I was 2 weeks ago? Get rid of replay. We don't need that doubt every time there's a catch. That was Zach Boyack. Is that his name, Zach? Boyack's catch was a catch by any measure.
I thought it was a catch. The interception by Jalen Ramsey I thought was an interception.
Yes.
You know, so this is something that – and the crazy thing is they're getting more and more technical with it. They're adding more and more cameras to the game, so it's only going to get worse.
One more call. I want to squeeze this one in. Ed calling from Irondequoit outside Rochester. Go ahead, Ed. You're on the air with us.
Thanks for taking the call. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year,
Ed.
Start with the defense yesterday. They did play a solid game. First half, time of possession, though, changed in the second half. And we all know that the quarterback, 88 yards running the ball, you had to put a spy on him to slow him down, and that change didn't happen.
Well, before you get too far down that road, Ed, you do that, and then what? Is Leonard Fournette going to start hurting you if you got one man dedicated to the quarterback? Because they really had Leonard Fournette shut down. I'm just saying, there's a price to pay if you're going to put a spy on a quarterback, especially a quarterback who should not need a spy.
That's my biggest thing. He's not Cam Newton, Tyrod Taylor, Russell Wilson. This dude is Blake Bortles. I mean, yeah, he made some plays yesterday, but you really shouldn't need a spy. That's why Chris Brown was talking about, you know, guys like Preston, you need more speed at the linebacker position because you shouldn't have to really spy a Blake Bortles.
Go ahead, Ed. You had one more point, I believe.
Yes, exactly. The other one would be is the NFL, the genre of things you're talking about, has the most work to do out of any team in the NFL to get the game back to where it belongs. The running game, the call, what's a touchdown, not a touchdown. And you look at our coaches that are now in the league, Wade Phillips, Polarki, and Doug Marone, really, by walking away, made Buffalo a better team. Thank you for having me listen. And it is a much improved team with our coach now.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Yeah, I think so. And we're going to get into this as the week goes along, Donald, like kind of examine how they've gotten better this year. And I think we're also going to acknowledge the next steps. They've got a lot of work to do.
There's a lot of work. A lot of work to do.
Yep. But you know, what do we keep? I'll keep saying it. Add it to the list.
Add it to the list.
This is what we need. This is what we need.
And you might even lose one of your front office people here moving up.
Gain, talking about Houston. Yeah.
Right. So we'll see.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Big day for the Browns. Preston Brown joined us earlier today on the show. Obviously, Preston's going into, as the offseason began, he's going into his unrestricted free agent status. And he talked about what his plans might be for the future.
I want to be here. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, to come back here and be with this community, with the people upstairs, with the janitors, Rick in the mailroom. I mean, everybody here is just, yeah.
Maybe left.
You guys.
Thank you.
So, I mean, that's the ultimate goal, to remain here.
Why do we have to remind them about us? I don't get that.
We need to put a clause in the contract.
We're viewed as the outsiders here. Chris Brown followed up Preston Brown. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Talked about that game yesterday, the outcome of that game, and how surprising it was that the Bills could only put 3 points up on the scoreboard.
You're thinking, okay, you know, Jacksonville's going to get the ball first here in the second half, but if you can still keep Leonard Fournette in check, which, as Murph knows, was my key to the game yesterday, mm-hmm. you know, I was hopeful that, you know, the offense could find some kind of spark in the second half and do enough, you know, to take the lead in that game. But I was of the firm belief that the team that scored next after halftime was probably going to win that football game as long as it was a touchdown, and that proved to be the case.
There you go, Chris Brown. I'll finish up here today down where I started. I acknowledge it was a good, solid season, and they took serious strides forward. We're going to talk about that all the rest of this week and into the future. But it is a tough loss because it was right there to be won. It was a play away, and the Bills just could not squeeze out one play that they needed.
Yeah, I mean, we said last week if they lost, it was going to hurt.
It hurts.
It hurts more when you lose 10-3.
Yeah.
And the quarterback runs for 88 yards, and that's how you – I mean, he throws a touchdown pass, but that's truly how you lost the game. That hurts.
Yeah. And so the press on. I mean, we've got a lot more to talk about. I'm sure we'll go over some of that game in tomorrow's show. Steve Tasker is scheduled to join us on tomorrow's show. He was on the sidelines yesterday for the Westwood One radio network. But eventually we spin it forward. We'll kind of, I know, over the next few days count some of the things that went well, some of the things they accomplished this year, and then get into some of the things that they need to do. And as we've said, there's a long list of improvements that need to be made to this 9-7 team that lost in the wild card playoff round.
Championship game tonight. Who you have?
I mean, I'm rooting for Georgia, but
yeah, I think Alabama's, a lot of people are rooting for Georgia. You get tired of seeing Alabama win it.
Yes, but you do.
As we saw last year's championship game, there's going to be a lot of draft talent. So, Bills fans, watch the game tonight because there's going to be a lot of first-round picks in tonight's game.
Yeah,
and I'm going to go root for Georgia, so I'm going to say Georgia's going to pull off an upset.
All right. You heard it here. He called it. Hey, we want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. We are back tomorrow, 12 noon, with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.